gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yes, it is. Why? Because human magic is here. Kathleen Madigan live in studio, and she just had to. I just attached myself like an alien face sucker because it is a very sad day in the comedy community.
It's a very sad day.
It's been a very sad year. I retweeted a picture of you. You entertained the troops with Robin Williams, right?
Yes, we went to Iraq and Afghanistan and all that. And I, like, as a comic, I'd done a bunch of shows with him, but I didn't know him off stage. And I said to Lou, if he's on like that all the time, I'm going to lose it. Like, I don't know if I can, because it's 2 weeks in bunk beds together. There's no escaping it.
With the USO,
And Lou had done that movie Accepted with him. Louis Black is.
Right.
And he's like, no, when he's not on stage, I swear to God, you're going to love him. He's normal. He's smart. He's fun. He's not like that hyper guy. I'm like, I'll have to get some medication from my mother for anxiety if he's going to bring that to the party for 2 weeks. And he was just the nicest, smartest. Mm-hmm. So it's very soft-spoken. I said to Lou, you could learn something from his offstage behavior, Louis. Why don't you bring it down a level? No, you're
studio.
The crazy person.
We've had Lou in studio. There's no difference in commercial breaks from when he's on.
I said, I'm rethinking my friendship with Lou, and you're my best friend. I go, you really need to bring it down.
That's like Gilbert Gottfried, like, right in the commercial breaks. He's like, oh, thank you very much. Okay.
Yeah,
he sounds like he could be hosting Masterpiece Theater.
Yeah.
And you turn the mic on.
That was an on stage and stuff, but it was so fun. Like, these troops sometimes would wait hours for us to get there. Wow. Not that we were being divas. There would be, like, sandstorms or whatever. It was all outside.
Kathleen.
It was all freezing.
That's what she used this morning. She just got here.
Didn't she use
sandstorm?
Right at 5:59.
Yeah.
I'm not early, but I'm on time.
Yeah.
And to watch these troops who have no entertainment, when they would go, ladies and gentlemen, Robin Williams, I mean, I never missed it. I went out every night. Because, we're comedians, but he was a star.
Yeah.
There's a very big difference, as I would point out to Lou. Here's what's missing from our resume. This is why we are not stars, Louis. This is why when they say, please welcome Louis Black or Kathleen Madigan, people go, oh, thanks for coming. And when they say, please welcome Robin Williams,
humble.
People lose their minds.
Oh, my God.
This is how sweet he was, too. I said, hey, Robin, this is how vague my dad is. My dad goes, a guy I play golf with is a good friend of mine. He's got a kid in Kandahar on the base. Could you look him up and try to get him out of work and get him a ticket to the show? Really, Dad? A guy in Kandahar. The Kandahar base has 4,500 people
on it. That's all the information you got.
I can narrow it down. Brian. I got any more than that, Dad? I'll have to call Bob. So then he calls and he gives me the kid's last name, and I'm like, Dad, it's a long shot, but I'll try. So I had Mike Mullen, who was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I thought, well, if he can't find him.
Hello, name drop.
Nobody
can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they found him, got him off work,
because
his job was to work in the prison on the base, which was horrifying. And I said to Robin, look, a friend of my dad's friend that he plays golf with, it's not a relative, just FYI, his friend, would you mind saying hi and getting a picture with him and stuff. Could not have been nicer. Does he have a seat? Where is he sitting? Let's move him forward. If you know him, we're moving him forward. Moved him all the way to the front. I mean, I still have the picture in my computer of him and that boy, Brian, I guess. I'm not even sure. I just know it. I was supposed to do it on behalf of Jack Madigan. but just the nicest
man. And one
man.
Sense is when you're supposed to do something on behalf of Jack Madigan.
You should probably try and get that done.
Yeah.
You don't need to have an argument with a lawyer about why you couldn't narrow it down from 4,500 people to find a guy named Brian. From Missouri. Okay.
That helps.
So I'll look for the bear patch on his sleeve. I'll go through every soldier and go, let me see your patch. Let me see your patch.
So... and what a morning to have you here between Iraq and but Robin Williams, this is because we hardly ever get you. You're like a little delicacy because you're always on the road.
That's
and
right.
So,
you're like caviar.
Yeah. And by the way, I know we're probably going to discuss substance abuse, so probably not a good day to have mimosas on the set. But we want you to know we take your rider very, very seriously here at the Stephanie Miller Show. And did I have that sitting there for you?
Yeah, you did. That's way more than the Biloxi Casino had last weekend. They forgot. gross.
And did you raise a stink or just?
No, I never say anything, which is probably why half the time it doesn't get done. Because they
oh,
go,
no, Travis
no,
came
I've heard
in.
She doesn't care.
No, it's not that I don't care. It's Travis like, popped his head in yesterday. He goes, Kathleen Madigan tomorrow. Mimosas. She's serious.
It's mimosas with
did
Madigan.
Did you see the look on my face? I was like, okay.
And you guys have the good champagne. Oh, I brought the champagne in a can.
You did. Oh.
In fact, yesterday I had the champagne because clearly
you're drunk.
I have the champagne.
Yes.
Right. But I forgot the orange juice at the supermarket, so I had to call a friend. I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot the orange juice for Kathleen Madigan. Can you stop and get me orange juice?
That's the mark of a good drinker. That's the mark of a good drinker, though. Why bother with the orange juice? Yeah. Why bother with ice?
She probably would have been fine with that. I forgot the orange juice. All right. It's 99% mim and no mosa.
You should pour some champagne into your emergency right there.
She's actually working.
I am. Someone's got to fly this ship. Listen, and you know me, I tend to be the chick that cries on the radio anyway.
And I was Jean-Luc Picard doesn't drink, okay? Not while the ship's moving.
That's right, not while the ship's
maybe
moving.
When he goes into the holodeck.
the second it stops moving. Yeah, but I was saying we were talking a little bit in the 30 seconds that before the show started that you had gotten here. Because of the sandstorm, we were talking about, I've been dealing with death like nonstop, it seems lately, and you were saying it's just
bad year.
Yeah.
John Panette, this guy Tim Wilson, mm-hmm. big Southern comedian guy, and just when I got left Tim Wilson, we did a giant fundraiser memorial at the huge TPAC in Nashville, like 5,000 seats, Ron White did it, everybody, all the old guys, Killer Bees, all those guys. Raised a lot. We raised like $90,000 for the two kids. So yay for that.
Wow. Yay.
But as soon as I left that, then John died. Then Panette died.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I don't know. Some of the guys you see it coming, but it's still shocking when it happens.
Yeah. Isn't that something? I mean, everybody knows because he was so open about substance abuse. But, you know, and particularly the fact that it was likely suicide and asphyxiation. It just was, I think it was shocking. And I think there's, like you were, you know, alluding to how huge his career was. I think there's hardly any of us in any of these sort of generations that you don't remember a time when Robin Williams was in your life. And I was just really shaken up by it. And like you say, I don't know. Well, Chris was just here Sunday. I just gave a memorial party for my friend Trisha's mom. My friend Jimmy died of a heart attack like 2 months ago. I have a 39-year-old friend who took a drug overdose about a month ago. I mean, it just, and I think you like you're saying, a lot of people have said, I don't know what is going on, and you wonder, is it part of the world? The news around the world is so horrible. Is it?
It's
is
awful.
Is it making people's depression worse, or is it
Well, depression is a disease. It's not due to outside forces. It's due to chemical imbalance in your brain. So
and if you have both. Like my mom's an addict, but she doesn't have the depression. Sometimes the addiction would lead to, but it was always a situational depression.
Right. Yeah. Like
if you said to my mom, what's wrong? Get a pen. She's got a laundry list. I'll tell you another thing. Here's another thing, Kathleen, and tell your father while you're at it. My mom could tell you, but someone who's truly depressed.
Right.
They go, I don't know. It's a feeling.
Yeah.
Well, what can I do to help you?
Nothing.
You can't. Nothing. Right. So it's two totally different things, but to have them together, and like Lewis said last night, he goes, I had thought that Robin had figured out a system to contain it and deal with it. And I said, well, he did, but he probably made it 40 years longer by comedy and all those things.
Sure,
he probably made it a lot longer than somebody who was fighting it without a way to express any of it. My thing was, well, he battled it longer than some.
Yeah, no, maybe, I was saying, I mean, when you look at how many, you know, whether you're talking about Belushi, and he was there the night John Belushi died. No, but he talked about that being a wake-up call, and then he got sober for quite a while after that and quit cold turkey drugs. He was about to have his first, I don't know if it was his first child, but...
Yeah, because they said, why'd you stop? He said, cocaine and the grand jury.
Yeah, he was famous for saying cocaine is God's way of telling you you're making too much money.
Yeah.
I mean, you just go, wow. And then you just think, like, we really did sleep in bunk beds and stuff. You're that close to somebody, and it's just very odd to sit next to him on a bus 3 years ago in Iraq to think that he would have said, 3 years from now, I just won't be here anymore.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre concept that they're... Especially 63, the older we get.
Well, he didn't flame out in his 30s like some of the people we've been talking about.
Right.
I
mean, and he easily could have.
Yeah, and that's why you, because he hit such.
Well, he also had open heart surgery, and my mom, as a nurse of 100 years, will tell you that that can.
Depression, right?
It can really switch up the chemical makeup. And if you're already having problems, and then you have that, you know, like Lou was really upset. I said, well, you got to just be happy you made it 63 years.
Yeah.
Most addicts or people dealing with depression have a tough time getting that far.
Yeah.
You know, he was smart enough to try to figure out what did Lou keep calling it? Not a configuration, but a system sort of how to deal with the ups and downs and all that.
Yeah, so. And we were saying that he just was back in rehab in July, right? Last month?
Went in as a preventative measure. But that's if we're to believe that. I mean, maybe it was a psychiatric ward, and people are too ashamed to say that, and they shouldn't be.
No, they shouldn't.
You just go, look, my brain is off again, and it would be a horrible thing to live with. One of my younger brother's friends has schizophrenic problems, and I mean, it's just horrifying, because I think, like, I've gotten hammered, and there's times I don't remember, and you're so scared, you're like, what? What did I do? It was within the realm of normal.
I've never had one of those conversations.
But for but for your brain to do it on its own, like mine's doing it because I did it.
Right.
Well, Kathleen, you don't have 17 beers and a shot of tequila because you just think it sounds
fun. It's
like
your mom's depression is situational. Right. And the situation is you poured a lot of vodka into it.
The situation is me. But for that to be the way you live, and then people, you take the medication and they don't like how it makes them feel, so then they don't want to take the medication. Understandably.
Yeah.
You go, okay, it's just a very hard disease, and I would fight to the day is done that it is a disease. And
yeah.
I think it's just an awful disease to be with your whole life. Because there is no quite cure. It's a maintenance program forever. Which is difficult to maintain sometimes.
You said that your friend Lewis Black did say, can we check into Hazelden on a preventative
basis? Wait, he goes, Robin, is he even drinking or doing anything? And he's going? I go, yeah, well, maybe he feels like he's gonna. He goes, well, maybe we should go now. I'm sure we'll get to that point. I said, I don't think they'll take us, Lou. We haven't even been there once. I think we have to get really in a deep hole and then show up and then pick the rooms we like. And then when we go back, we could... And that's a joke, but it's true that
but very dark.
Lewis
is very dark.
Yes, very, very dark.
But if you thought there was anything you were going to say after Lewis Black said that was not going to be somewhat dark.
Be sort of dark and twisted.
But you know what? I mean, what a perfect morning, honestly, for you to be here. Because I was thinking people, like, whether it's Robin or Lewis or you or any of us, I mean... This is what people, so many people, Chris, right, when we go out, go, oh, you wouldn't believe, you know, you keep me sane, which always, what do I say? I am so lightly tethered to my own, that terrifies me.
Yes.
But the people that try to make people laugh, it's because there are so many people struggling with so much and with depression, I think, you know.
I think there's a lot of people that things are just, they're hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, but think of, you know, all the stuff Robin Williams probably got a lot of people through, you know.
In his movies, I preferred his drama over his comedy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant actor.
What was the one with the Parkinson's, not the Parkinson's, not the...
Awakenings.
Yeah. Alzheimer's people or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I just thought he, you know what, he was an actor. He was a Juilliard actor.
Yeah.
That's why, like, his actual stand-up, the energy of it, sometimes I wanted it to come down a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't need the theatrics.
Right.
I don't want the running around and the jumping up and down. It's not my thing. But most people did like it, Kathleen didn't get a vote on that, clearly. But but that was the actor side of him. Like, I'm not an actor. I just stand there and talk. I don't even know how to act. So I'm never going to be like that.
Darkly unintentionally funny, James Lipton, during the live interviews yesterday, God bless him. He was obviously... you know, very, you know, affected
strong,
like the rest of us. But, yeah, he was just, because I think you've seen him parodied so much that it's like.
I don't even know if it's him anymore.
Right.
I don't think he realized he was still on camera because they broke in to say, once again, if you've just tuned in, actor Robin Williams. James Lipton just goes, Jesus Christ.
What?
I don't think he realizes he's on air. Oh, God.
I'll tell you, wait, do we have time? Or
we're going to break and come.
Joy Behar last night on CNN.
All right.
Oh, boy.
A lot to talk about. All right, 20 minutes after the hour. It's Mimosas with Madison, which may be
Madigan.
Which must be very inappropriate today, but we're doing it anyway. Could I pour for you?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, sure. Right. I'll have a bartender. Right. Let's shake this up. Let's shake it up. Make it right.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That laughter sounds like the result of misbehavior.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Mimosas with Madigan. Kathleen Madigan is here on her first mimosa.
The perfect mimosa.
It's perfect. Thank you. We made it together.
That's why it's perfect.
See, this was the perfect liberal helpers. I had the orange juice. She had the champagne. She's like, you go. Okay, now you go.
And then it mixes it itself.
If only Congress could work like that.
After you. Oh, no. You first. Thank you.
So last night, CNN, Joy Behar.
Yes. Oh, dear.
Okay. I know. I love Joy, though.
I know, yeah.
Joy's always less emotion, more just facts. She's like, oh, God, this information. I hate to receive information like this. It's so sad. So she's given the interview to Don Lemon, and all of a sudden you hear the sexy hip-hop version of Call Me Maybe, but nobody knows what's going on. And she's like, oh, God, they won't quit calling. They won't quit calling. It's her cell phone.
Oh, no.
I'm like, really,
please,
Joy?
Please turn your cell phone off.
Call me maybe.
Turn your cell phone off during the interview about the dead comedy friend. Oh, my God.
Oh,
they won't quit calling. I'm only speaking to you. I'm only speaking to you, Don. I'm only talking to you.
Oh, my God. I know. I was saying it was like the unintentional comedy of James Lipton, because I think you're right. Like, I was transfixed all night to the TV. I just, you know, and I don't know why, again, whether I've just been dealing with a lot of, you know, death in my life, or whether it just, and I didn't even know Robin Williams, as I was saying, but it just impacted me for some reason emotionally. So I'm just, you know, how you're like watching for hours because you're just sort of, so James Lipton, I mean, it was the same thing. He kept saying, they won't stop calling me. They won't stop. You shouldn't blurt that out when you're with another interview. They
right.
won't, oh,
right.
My phone. And then he kept apologizing. I'm sorry. This is the worst interview I've ever done. He made it about him a little much. This is the worst interview I've ever done.
Turn your phone off.
Right. So then he,
you know,
it was just weird because he looks like a parody of himself, and God bless him. He seemed very, you know, distraught, but he was like, did he hang himself? I know what asphyxiate means, but did he, and the anchor's like, we don't know yet. We don't have any information about that yet. But
wow.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that, like Chris, you were saying, I mean, that's what people do off air. They speculate, going, what does that mean?
And then it starts the whole, well, yeah. I wanted to do a game show a long time ago called Start a Rumor.
Yeah.
And you just throw out facts and see if people believe them. And then just if you finish it, you start one, I finish it. And then see if it really hits mainstream without being mean, but you know what I mean? A funny rumor, not a mean rumor.
You know, I mean, obviously the speculation we're talking about, that people, you can choke on your own vomit if it is drug-related. You can, right in the garage in your car, you can asphyxiate,
your car in the garage,
I guess. But
I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean,
it's a little less painful.
No,
than
I just dealt
yourself,
with this with the friend that had the overdose. There was speculation on her Facebook page, was it suicide? And people had to clear up that it was not. It was an accidental drug overdose, because sometimes people don't know whether it's intentional or not. This certainly seemed intentional, but I don't think we know the details yet.
Well, it depends. I mean, if he choked on his own vomit, then I'd say maybe it was an accident.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, there's also drugs you could take that cause you to vomit if you're an alcoholic, to try to make you not drink. Like, he could have been taken. I don't know if they still use that drug anymore, though. They used to, but.
Right.
There's some, who, at the end of the day, what's really the difference?
Yeah.
You know,
he's gone.
Exactly. I mean, it matters to his family, I suppose, so they can understand it, but.
Right. But I think the fact that they're calling it suicide already, I mean,
right.
It seems
that
like,
something,
you know,
was obvious when they got there. This was.
Yeah.
What I'm going to bet. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there is the unintentional hilarity of Joy Behar's ringtone in the midst of it all.
I swear to God, it was Call Me Maybe. And I swear to God, because I'm like, why is CNN playing that?
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, crap. See? That's what happens when you drink all day and skip lunch.
Aw, KCB tweets. Right now it's hard to chuckle this morning, but this helps start the healing. Kathleen Madigan.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. That's nice.
Oh, by the way, Robbie tweets, how about the time James Lipton said to the interviewer, who's this again? I mean, what show is this? He did say that. Really?
I guess someone tweeted that James Lipton found out while he was on the air that it was suicide, so that's why he said Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was somewhat into the interview, but yeah, it was just, I mean, I think everybody was, like you said, Kathleen, it's weird to say shocked when you know someone has had a history of substance abuse, but I think you also alluded to that he'd made it to 63. I think you thought, oh,
yeah,
you know, and I think we thought, oh, he seemed like he was checking back in at rehab and he was doing better or something, or, you know, that's what you hoped, I guess.
Maintaining it.
Yeah.
Maintenance. Yeah, but clearly it didn't work out.
Yeah, you were saying just what we've been hearing sort of in the, you know, comedy community, but that they reached out to Whoopi, but she had no comment. She's probably too wrecked.
Yeah, but, you know, you think, like, for the first hour, like, where you just want to call people you know. You don't want to start talking at CNN and all these. I'm sure she got flooded with the 90 million, well, her publicist anyway, 90
million. Yeah, Billy
million.
Crystal, we were saying.
Yeah, his, that's another one where you go, wow, those guys had lives with him, decades of comic relief. Remember, did you ever do those?
Yeah.
I did them too, yeah. We're like, you know what's weird to me is like, we all did all those comic reliefs and then we went, well, we made all the money we can, we're done. Like, it didn't go on. Like, there's still homeless people. Right, they're still hungry. Why did we stop? And then I was like, I don't know. I think we went to Farm Aid. And I think we were taking care of farmers. And I don't know what we're doing now. Comic Relief just kind of fizzled out.
It did.
It was like, I get that Robin and Billy and Whoopi may have been tired of doing it, but someone else should have said, okay, I'll help.
Right.
Like, why did we
but
all
I think
just
it became
fold?
So it became so identified with them, I think, that...
Well, you got to do it. You got to do it like the judges on Idol, one at a time. You can't just trash them.
Or like The View we were just talking about. Or Menudo. You just keep swapping out people.
Exactly. I just think it's bizarre that we were all like, there are homeless people and they are hungry. We just made $1 million. We are done. What? I mean, there's more homeless people now than ever.
I mean, by the way, we're in live in studio with Kathleen Madigan, who entertained the troops with Robin Williams in Iraq. Speaking of doing things again, Iraq.
Oh, my God.
Again.
Well, this was the all-time best quote to in those big, giant cargo planes. Like, I put a picture on Twitter of me and Robin strapped in. You have to strap yourself into the wall.
I retweeted it,
And you sit on these little nets. It's not like a real plane. And then the back is open, and there's a guy with a machine gun shooting when you take off.
Which is soothing.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Lou was nervous, and he goes...
Louis Black.
Yeah, he's like, let's get on last. I don't like it. Lou's not a guy you want to go to war with, okay? Just FYI, if it ever comes up...
Even served by doing comedy, not even serving
just
by
even
actually...
traveling in war zones. He's not exactly a solid guy with that. And we got on last, but Lou didn't think it through. If you get on last, you're closest...
You're closer to the opening.
To the opening and the machine gun man and blah, blah,
oh,
blah.
Wow.
And he was kind of flipping out, and Robin goes, calm down, Louis, calm down. And I go, Lou, when Robin Williams tells you to calm down, you have reached the apex of anxiety. You've really got to bring it down a level. I mean, no one is that calm, but we were in Mosul, we were everywhere, but every place we've been, ISIS is now taking over. I'm like, oh, I'm really glad we spent all those shows in Mosul and we did the whole thing, because that was the worst one. We were getting mortared then while we were on stage. And
yikes!
Stuff. That was the most dangerous. We almost didn't go.
Wow, did you you saw this yesterday? The you know, them airdropping the you know, the supplies and taking some of the Yazidis with them.
Yeah.
Once again, can I just say, does the reporter always have to make it about him? Who was that screamy reporter?
I know, the blonde
you
guy.
Right,
the
blonde
guy.
I was like, I was like James Lipton making it about him to some degree last night. It's like, you know, we won the Emmy. How many times for acting? It's like, all
right,
And I get he was trying to make a point about Robin, but it was like.
I thought it was odd, too, that they kept pointing out, okay, we got 60 people. Now, I read that there's at least 20,000 in the mountains that are the Yazidis that are that have run away.
Right.
Okay, so I'm not sure what's going on with, and apparently you could be one of the 60s if you just ran the fastest.
Yeah.
They just started scooping people up.
I know.
If you get near the helicopter.
It was a little disconcerting watching the people that got left. Like, oh, sorry.
They just threw them a box of diapers.
That's
here you go. Let us know how that works out. We'll be back whenever we can. Things are very weird.
It's not like the ferry to Catalina. Like, you're like, oh, okay, bye.
No.
That was more like Saigon. It was just like, ow.
I just don't understand.
I mean, you were happy for the people in the thing, but you were just like, oh,
but
that's a horrible shot of the people.
They can't take everybody, because then they can't take off.
It was a little like Titanic, too.
Yeah. I was just thinking that. It was like, get off my wood.
I saw a couple guys pushing women out of the way. Like 35-year-old dudes. Like, come on, man. How about the baby? Put the baby on. The one little baby got on, the little redheaded kid.
Right.
And I was like, look at that. One of my little people over there. How are he sneaking? Looks like nobody. I find this suspect. Whatever.
He looks like a little Opie.
He looks like a little leprechaun.
How did Opie
What's he doing in the mountains of Iraq? How did they get a redhead with blue eyes? I just don't understand the plan. I think it's a very bizarre plan. We're going to send one helicopter. It's going to shoot its way in.
Mm-hmm. It's shoot its way out.
And out. Yeah. And it's going to grab the first 60 people that run to the foot of the elevator, of the helicopter, and then off we go.
Right.
Are you coming back?
Oh, and by the way, the CNN reporter did say the thing we talked about yesterday is, do they ever hit anybody with the supplies?
Oh, yeah. Well, and they also explode upon impact.
Right. He said, I hope we didn't hit anybody with that water. That guy, he actually did. He yelled at the blonde.
Oh, God.
Right.
I know your day's not going well. Here's a crate of water on your skull. It's there. I just don't understand the plan. There didn't seem to be any organization. It seemed very haphazard and not well planned. I'm sure those 60 people are very happy, but I can't do math. But
he survived
19,940.
Survived ISIS, right? Survived the trek to the mountains, and now here comes a package of Huggies.
Yeah. But they're the denim ones, so it looks like they're wearing baby blue jeans.
What did I wear to our
fancy... Do they make denim?
Yeah, they look like jean shorts.
What did I wear to our fancy Free Speech TV donor lunch?
Pajama jeans.
Pajama jeans.
She wore pajama jeans.
I'll go. I'm going to bring them down. I'm going to bring them down and show you. Okay. Oh, they look just like jeans. They're soft as pajamas. This is how old I've gotten.
You sound like the infomercial.
Yeah, I'm not wearing anything else.
Could you buy them off of HSN?
As seen on TV. So, yes, they took diapers, milk, water, and food, and so they were, you know, throwing that out. But, we did speculate that yesterday, not to be dark about it, but then he screamed the thing we talked about, because that would be bad. And I don't know the number of casualties. I hope that wasn't the case. I don't think he actually identified them hitting anybody with stuff.
Or a kid. I mean, the case is as big as a child's head.
And it's full of water, which is heavy.
Heavy.
Yeah. Right.
I don't understand the whole thing. I did read about the Yazidis, though, because I didn't know who they were.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's what I was saying. I was like, wow, what is the peacock angel? Is there a...
Well, whatever the word for the one person they pray to, also in Arabic means devil. So the ISIS people say they're devil worshippers.
Right.
And from the looks of them on the helicopter, I'm going to say I don't think so.
No.
They just look like normal people.
Yeah, right. The crying kids kind of got to me. I mean, they were just bawling their eyes out.
Well, everybody was crying.
Except for those two 35-year-old guys that knocked everybody out of the way to get on.
Right.
What's up? Clearly, they've never seen Titanic.
No.
It's not going to end well.
They were paying people. Oh, no, there's better helicopters on the other side. Here's some free pre-packaged meals. The better helicopters are over there. They got first class. I would wait.
Yeah. Yesterday's news, all of it.
Okay. The president on the situation in Iraq.
New Iraqi leadership has a difficult task. It has to regain the confidence of its citizens by governing inclusively and by taking steps to demonstrate its resolve. The United States stands ready to support a government that addresses the needs and grievances of all Iraqi people.
It sounded like there was a bit of a coup going on
yesterday.
Well,
right. So Iraq's president formally nominated a candidate to replace al-Maliki.
As prime minister.
Right.
Right.
So it broke like a month-long political deadlock, but it also seemed to take Iraq into uncharted territory as Mr. Maliki gave no signal he's going to relinquish power. So that could be a military coup if he tries to... It's all going so well, isn't it? It's all going so well
he's
over there.
He's not giving in.
No.
Right. So if he doesn't...
Even though constitutionally he should. So
well, and also he should for the good of the country. You can't have a whole government where you've allowed no one else to be represented but your group. He's been doing that since day one.
That's what started all this latest stuff is the de-bathification and them, you know, excluding. I mean, this is what I mean. We upset the balance of power. Sunnis were in power, and now the Shiites are in power, and they're excluding this, you know, and it's just like,
Saddam's daughters in Jordan are backing the ISIS people to go in, and it's just a giant circle.
Wow.
But how did no one see this coming to begin with was my point.
Oh, a lot of people did.
Yeah, exactly. And every
the only ones they interview on TV are the ones that did not, though.
Yeah.
Like right.
Paul Wolfowitz and
right.
Dick Cheney. And
right. Oh, yeah, somebody, let's see.
What? Huh? Are you okay?
Oh, Paul Bremer? Yeah. Somebody writes me, I guess Paul Bremer's running his mouth about retraining the Iraqi army, which he destroyed again. Somebody tweeted, Bremer, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Crystal, Krauthammer. You wonder how they sleep at night. You really do.
Bremer was on, did you see the front? There was a front line about the whole, how did we get to this point in Iraq? And they said, well, General so-and-so, I don't remember which one, said that he had a conversation with you that you should not, you know, get rid of the whole Iraqi army. Do you remember that conversation? Oh, God, I don't know. You know, I had so many conversations. No, this one's kind of important. This wasn't about which color uniforms you want for the new guys. This was, are we getting rid of
right.
150,000 people that were, and then we had to repay them to
right.
get them back.
Right.
Like cash.
Yeah, that was always a smart idea. Yeah, get out and take your guns and stuff and just go.
With no job, no payment.
Right.
In 2 weeks,
yeah.
we'll come back to you with $1,500 and ask you to come back.
Right.
That's exactly what happened. Cash.
Right.
Wow.
That strikes me as a good idea. Oh, in Texas, they're going to try to start selling alcohol at gun shows.
Yeah.
It seems as good an idea as that.
Well,
in the what could go wrong category.
Even groups like the NRA are opposed to that.
Right.
Well, yeah, because they're going to end up shooting their own memberships.
Yes. It's calling,
yeah.
calling the herd.
Yeah. Yeah, even the NRA knows, hey, we don't want them liquored up around each other. we're trying to do a new membership drive, not murder one another by accidentalness.
As you would say when you're drunk at a gun show. All right.
So while you're taking a selfie with a 12-gauge. Oh, man. Somebody did that at
yes,
a gun show.
Someone did that.
Yeah.
No, on Facebook. Guy.
He was trying to take a selfie to post on Facebook, and he shot himself. Like, yeah. I guess when you...
He did the wrong trigger at the
yeah,
wrong time.
Yeah. He wasn't...
He thought he was clicking, shooting the picture. And he's, okay.
Why was it loaded? Let's start there.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, 46 minutes after the hour, Mimosas with Madigan, more Robin Williams memories and just whatever pops out of her mimosa...
addled brain?
Yes.
Yeah.
On the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 51 minutes after the hour.
Printing something.
Yes, I did.
Can hear it.
1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. And I'm not the one drinking mimosas. That's Kathleen Madigan over there.
It looks like she could use a refill.
I'm going slow.
All right.
Going slowly.
All right.
Travis is a psychic booker at this point because how can we have known poor Robin Williams, who passed away, who you had done comedy with in Iraq, Iraq's back in the news, and you're from St. Louis.
I'm actually from, I went to high school in the Ferguson-Florissant School District, and the Ferguson is where all this happened, and I know these streets.
All
and
these
I know.
Riots are going on. Yeah,
yeah, because, you know, there's two stories. You can either believe the witnesses or you can believe the cops. The cops
right.
who have a video that we're not really, they won't show anybody.
Mm.
Well, why can't we see
yeah,
the video?
Yeah, that's suspect.
Big problem is up there, all the cops are white. Most of the people are black, and they don't trust the cops. Why would you, with the history of what's going on? So neither side likes each other. Then the white cops get super afraid of the black people because they know they don't like them, which they don't.
Yeah.
Right.
But it doesn't mean they're going to do anything. And then this shooting, I mean, they're going to say, well, we're bringing the, they are bringing in the FBI, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But
the cops have one side, and the kids, you know, but it... It seemed like that he shot him 8 times as he was
yeah, at some point
walking away or had his
hands up.
Yeah.
Yep, 35 feet away.
Yeah.
What's going to go down there? Nothing. And this time, though, unlike Trayvon, there are witnesses. So at least maybe something can actually get accomplished.
Right.
If you're going to, if you, Well, I don't know, but
it seems so senseless in the first place, Kathleen. We were talking about that he was just walking on a, as you said, a subdivision street, and the cop basically said, "Get on the sidewalk." And you think, what a dumb,
what a fight to pick. Why are you picking this fight? It's like the really big giant black guy that the cops put in the chokehold in New York.
Yeah,
it was over fake cigs.
Right.
Really?
Right.
You're gonna kill somebody?
Right.
You're gonna escalate a situation.
Right.
Because he might be selling fake cigarettes?
Right.
I hope he is.
I don't think that's in their training.
Yeah.
I just, picking the fights, starting things in a situation that's already volatile, you have to bear some responsibility for it. I didn't know it was a crime not to walk on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
I grew up there. I didn't know I'd be in trouble. I was always in the street. Well, I didn't even know that was a crime. Clearly, I don't know the laws of where I grew up. But that whole area, it's been a powder keg. It's going to explode. We all knew it. St. Louis is very black and white. It's very much like maybe Detroit.
Can't Mom and Dad Madigan do something about this?
Mom and Dad Madigan live in the Ozarks now. They are very far away from roads that are hard, as my mom says. I just can't deal with that traffic, Kathleen. But there was a big...
What qualifies as a road that's hard?
A highway that would be the equivalent, well, anything.
Asphalt.
Anything out here. No, more than two lanes would be a hard road.
Okay.
Yeah, two on each side. Okay. It's still hard. Yeah, it gets too complicated. She's not doing it. It's just not happening. But, you know, she always said, I'm not going to that mall. I think it's dangerous, this mall called the Galleria. I go, Mom, you're out of your mind. It's not that dangerous. Yes, it is. I'm not going. I'm not. You can't make me go. You can't make me go. Well, last night they had to close the Galleria.
Oh.
Because.
Oh, so now your mom could call and say, I told you so.
Spill over.
I told you, Kathleen. I've been telling you for 15 years that mall was danger. I just knew it. I felt it. And the other, I told you so. My dad's been waiting since 9/11 for this one. Right after 9/11, they were talking about all the other targets that people could possibly, terrorists could hit.
Right.
Yes. But my dad, and he did say it, I will give it to him, the day after 9/11, dams. You got to go for dams. If anybody's smart, fly into a dam. I could destroy all of Nevada and California with one airplane.
Shut up, Jack.
Yeah, Dad. He goes, I'm just saying, if you're a terrorist, there's a, what good is the Super Bowl? You know, because they kept saying, what if they attack the Super Bowl?
Yeah, right.
What if they do this? He's like, stupid, everyone they threw out. And finally, ISIS has the biggest dam under their control.
Uh-huh.
My dad's like, finally. Somebody has a plan.
Oh, your parents are feeling their oats between the mall and the dam.
It's a huge week of I told you so.
Yeah, I felt
your
like
you could be the most effective terrorist on earth.
I know. I felt like
put these ideas into motion.
I said, are you planning something, Dad? Yeah. What's going on? He's like, no, I've just never understood why if you're going to attack an enemy, you go for the, even in the Civil War, I would have went for the dams. I've never, it's a target sitting right there. Nobody
picked up. Our chief suspect is the father of comedian Kathleen Madigan.
He did say it, though. I got to go, all right.
We have him on tape saying,
if anything happens to the Hoover Dam, call my parents. Maybe they drove their Cadillac into one of the control towers.
I do feel like people are getting a little too chatty after 9/11.
Yeah. Well, I do. You know, the water supply is just wide open there.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
Well, on CNN, they were going through them all.
Yeah.
So if you were terrorist and you didn't have any ideas, you'd go, oh, well.
We know why, because it says ratings go up when there's a crisis.
Wolf Blitzer has ideas. Let's turn on Wolfie.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it was a big
okay,
I told you so.
Kathleen Madigan is drinking mimosas. I am not, because I am already the chick that cries on the radio, and I've had way too many people die recently in my life. But Zelda Williams, Robin Williams' daughter, tweeted, you alone will have the stars as no one else has them. And one of the stars I shall be living, and one of them I shall be laughing. And so it will be as if all the stars were laughing when you look at the sky at night. You, only you, will have all stars that can laugh. I love you. I miss you. I'll try to keep looking up.
Oh, God.
All right. Dave in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Stephanie. You know, the reason why you and Kathleen and Robin Williams and comedians, I think, are fine, this is my opinion, so it must be right, is because you're insightful. I mean, you understand humanity. You can be funny because you know how it works and how it doesn't work. And, you know, with Robin Williams' my dime store analysis, he was depressed. He was clinically depressed. He has, and then on top of that, he has this sort of existential angst over why can't the world be better. I mean, that's why he did things like comedy relief and going with Kathleen to Iraq and other things. There was this need to try to make the world a better place. And I really think the horror of the recent times and the nastiness of some of the media reporting gets to people who are more sensitive and who just say, why can't the world be a better place? I know you pick on yourself as I'm the chick that cries in the radio. Well, thank God you do. Thank God you're not like some zombie that just sits there and says stuff. I mean, we need to show that hurt and pain is real and not just, you know, let it go. Like,
now I'm going to seem mean because it's a hard break. I love you. Thank you, Dave.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. All right, more Mimosas with Madigan on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Yes, of course it is. And why?
Why?
Because it is Mimosas with Madigan Day.
Yes.
Kathleen Madigan, comedian extraordinaire, live in studio. I hope most people are watching on Free Speech TV, because the funniest thing is Dave in Minneapolis was just talking about how comedians like Robin Williams and Kathleen feel more deeply, and Kathleen was just pouring champagne. Like, glug, 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 glug. Uh-huh.
You know, I have to see
that visual. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But when somebody like Robin, when this happens, then I'm going to have to spend another 10 years convincing people that not all of us are depressed.
Right.
They're like, you guys are happy on stage, but you're really a sad clown, aren't you? No!
You're laughing on the outside,
not
crying on the inside.
Yeah, no. Most of the time, I'm pretty happy. It's very situational. If I'm sad, so there's a reason. I'm not a depressed person, but I think people think comedians are like that because these things happen. Or addicts, or you've got John Panetti, doing crazy things, and they think we're all just I'm very normal.
But then you have the people who say on Twitter, but he was such a happy person, why would he commit suicide? It's like, you don't know a person's personal pain, you know.
Well, because it's what she said. It's the crying, laughing on the outside, crying on the inside clown stereotype that people have. And like you said, I think you said something very smart last hour, that some depression is really serious and chemical and some is situational. I've had the situational kind. I think maybe I'm speaking too much, but I think I've thought about suicide. I've been there. I've been depressed enough, but I think it was situational at the time.
If this runs out, I will be sad.
Yes.
That's a situational situation.
Oh, she has more.
Oh, I have more.
Oh,
yeah.
I have the cans too.
That's never a situation here.
She brought cans of champagne.
Yeah,
I love that about Kathleen.
She did. Yeah. Just in case we did not take her rider seriously, which we did.
Yeah, well, you know, I get tired of showing up places and there's nothing. I thought, you know what, here's how you solve it. Bring your own.
Oh, no, I was terrified. I'm terrified of
forgot?
You. As cuddly as you are.
What if they forgot?
When Travis stuck his head in yesterday and said,
hours?
Kathleen Madigan tomorrow, Mimosas, she's serious. I was like,
and people are like, how can you drink at that hour? Because I've really been up every hour because I'm afraid I won't wake up. So really, I've been up since 1 o'clock.
Right. Yeah.
So really, it's noon. See how you rationalize it.
Traveling, all the rules are off because it's,
time zones.
Exactly.
It literally is 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I had a beer on the flight home from Atlanta. It was in the morning, and I thought that flight attendant's going to judge me, but I don't care. I said, would it be weird if I asked you for a beer? She's like, no, honey. And then she knew who I was. Then I felt extra stupid. I'm like, really?
Well, then she would know you want a beer.
Well, then maybe I won't be judged because I'm an entertainer and we're allowed to be crazy.
Yeah.
It always is amazing my whole career how when I put stuff, can I just have some Diet Coke and beers backstage? That's all I ask for. They won't do it. Hey, radio, we're going to pick you up at 9 o'clock. They forget. I'm supposed to be the loser. I'm bringing my own alcohol, my own sodas. I'm getting my own Uber to radio because the guy forgot me. I mean, it's just really astonishing the level of responsibility I assume and accept as and I'm supposed to be the screw off.
Right.
Other comics get away with it.
Right.
I know they do.
Maybe I've said how I keep my relative level of sanity.
Uh-huh.
It's because with your this level of mediocrity, then you have to deal with the levels of fame,
then you don't have the big
money and stuff that John Belushi and Robin Williams dealt with. I just if you make it to this level of mediocrity,
B minus,
sort of skate under the
B minus.
Right,
it's been my goal my whole life. B minus.
There you go.
I don't need to be in the A person club because then more will be expected. Why don't we put you in higher learning classes, Kathleen? Why don't we not? How about I just get a B minus and hang with the normal people? I don't want to work that hard. Is it? That's what's wrong though. It's not okay to say that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have any goals. How about that, Oprah? My vision board is blank. Big nothing.
I've long ago, like, I've come to grips with most of my dreams have died. This is pretty much it. This is pretty much in my little basement studio. So this is the deal.
Some guy in Montreal, I did the festival a couple weeks ago, and it was the big paper, like the Montreal Gazette or something, and he was like, so is this like a dream come true for you? I almost sound negative, but no, I never had this dream. Had I won the Kentucky Derby, yes, that would have been a dream come true. As a child at the track with my father, I pictured myself in a green satin check outfit winning the Kentucky Derby. But I didn't have comedy as a dream, so it can't be a dream come true. It's just an accident that happened.
Yeah.
And then I just go along with it, but I don't really think I had any dreams.
I actually had the opportunity to finally meet my idol, Cara Burnett, and I said to her, I wanted to be you, and then all my dreams died. So, and scene.
How'd she react to that? She laughed.
Yes.
Good.
In a sort of,
sort of there,
pity.
Way.
A little bit of pity
there,
in her eyes.
They're there kind of way.
They're there. Oh, well. Yeah, but anyway, you could sort of confirm what, I think those of us in Hollywood, the comedy business, even peripherally like me, I think you sort of knew that he was known as one of the nicest guys in the business. And I think, like that sort of,
and smart. Yeah. I mean, like, Juilliard, I'm like, when you say that to somebody from the Midwest, that's like saying you went to Narnia. Is that real? I thought it was only in movies. I'm not even kidding. And I'm like, wow, that's still open? Juilliard? Wow, you guys still do stuff there? Like, you're a serious actor.
Yeah.
Like, he was smart, but not like, oh, I'm going to show you how smart I am. You could just talk to him about anything, because we had bus rides and plane rides, and we just talked and talked and talked about everything from baseball to, it just says super smart, sweet, soft-spoken guy. It's a shame.
You
really
watched
bad.
Your favorite last night?
World According to Garp.
Yeah.
Yep, like right at the end.
Yeah.
Well, he dies at the end, so. Yeah.
Wow, so twice.
You said Awakenings was your favorite.
Yeah, I liked Awakenings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should try it again, that pill. I don't understand why that stopped. I'm serious.
And I also loved one of his lesser movies called One Hour Photo.
It was, the creepy one.
Because he you could tell he was bottling all of that energy, and it just made his character even more creepy.
Yeah.
Because there was all this energy that was going on underneath, and you could see it in his eyes and the way he acted. It was really.
Well, and the fact that he pulled that off when you're like, really, Mark? But he did.
But he did.
He
really did. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I would put him and Steve Martin in the same category
mm-hmm.
of people that could do just about anything and do it well.
Yep.
Not like, oh, I'm going to do everything in a mediocre. I can name 20 of those guys. But those two, when they said, okay, I'm going to go do this for real,
mm-hmm.
it was, wow, they can really do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. A star. He really was. I mean, when they would say announce his name in Iraq, here's Kathleen Madigan, here's Lewis Black. Even Kid Rock, he was with us one time. He's a rock star.
Right.
But Robin, it was just a different thing. Yeah. It was like, we don't have many stars anymore.
Right. Yeah.
We have people that do really well in a category.
Right.
But to be a star, it's almost impossible with the amount of media outlets.
That's what I'm going with. I'm just a niche, Chris.
Is that what you
want? Rather than I'm a complete failure and all my dreams have died, I'm just a niche. Everybody's a niche these days. I'm a little teeny tiny.
Exactly.
Okay.
But you found yours and you're in it.
That's right.
That's why
I am literally in my basement. I am in the king of comedy.
With your dogs,
I'm in the king of
alcohol.
Comedy. I don't even know if anyone else is listening to this. You guys could be cardboard cutouts, and I really wouldn't even know.
But it doesn't matter, because it's your house, it's your dogs.
That's right.
That's
and
right.
It's my reality.
And it's now your cans of champagne I'm giving you.
They must
you.
Be getting paid because they show up. I don't. Can't imagine. Would you? I can't imagine you do this for free. Would you, cardboard cutout? Okay. All right, Mike in Pennsylvania, you're on with Kathleen. Hello, Mike.
How y'all doing?
Good.
Hi, Mike.
I'm glad that your guest there is from the area and explained it. You know,
from Ferguson, Missouri? Yeah.
Yeah, that is a powder keg because, every 28 hours, a black male is shot by or killed by a vigilante or a police officer every 28 hours. And, this black kid walking in the street gets shot 8 times.
Yep.
I mean.
Well, that's what we said, Mike, is why do you even pick this fight in the first place?
The thing about it is that people start focusing on the reaction of the community that's a powder keg and being treated negatively by the people that's supposed to be protecting and serving, then they start, you know, venting their frustration through rioting, and people want to focus on the freaking property that can be replaced. But if, what are we supposed to do? We go out and vote. We put a black man in. He gets kicked to the curb. I mean, and he can't do nothing. If you start the program for black males, he gets shot down for focusing on black males. You know, and
right.
You know, it's and why we gotta focus in on the looting and the, you know.
Yeah, Mike, I hear you. Mike, thank you. Kathleen, I thought you said you had a really I thought interesting, you know, because having grown up there, you were talking about the racial, the honesty of what's going on racially there, and I think that's what he's alluding to, is that
yeah, there is no honesty because
you were saying that they were saying first of all, the police force should be more integrated, should look more like the community they serve,
yeah.
But you were saying part of what's the problem, the cops are all white, the community's all black.
It's an old boys club. They
right.
Only allow.
Yeah, if it was a black cop, let's say a black cop had shot the black kid. Then we take the race out of it. Now the race is out of it. Now it's just the cops versus the citizens. So it's a whole different level of fighting. This whole thing where all the cops are white, they keep giving their white friends the job because it's a good job. My brother has two friends that are cops up there.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money for that area of St. Louis plus benefits plus pension. Everybody wants the job, but they're not giving the black guys the job or the black women the job of cop. A couple. Just go look at all the news clips. I was sitting there going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 white guys.
Yep.
One black guy. Now, if it's the black cop and this whole thing goes down, we've completely erased the race thing. You know who does it? Reporters. If you check the local news, if there's an issue in the Korean neighborhood, they send the Korean reporter.
Yep,
the
do.
News does it. But the cops don't do
right.
it because the jobs are too valuable.
Well, you were saying there aren't any other races, though. There's no one else to hate. So
St. Louis is very black and white.
Right.
Well, we have, like, you know, we have a nice Jewish community to raise the level of our intelligence. But people don't even know where they really live. It's like we hear about it. It's a very old school, basic city. We had a couple Bosnians because there was trouble there, and a church brought them over.
Okay.
But, I mean, we just, like, I don't think I saw an Asian until I was, like, 18. I'm not even kidding. A real one.
No,
like a Martian.
When I went to USC, one of my best friends, Todd, when he said he was Jewish, I said, oh, what is that? And he looked at me like I had two heads. I went to Catholic school my whole life. I came from one of those kind of areas too, where we had one black kid or something in our high school, and
but my area, I mean, where I grew up, my high school was more than 50% black, so I've always been in the neighborhoods that
right.
are the powder mm-hmm. kegs.
Yeah,
and you go, nobody's saying the truth, and no, the looting really is disappointing, and the NAACP guy was saying that because what you're doing is you're playing in to the argument that the white people are going to say, see, black people are crazy. Look at them. They're burning down their own store. I understand the frustration, but that needs to stop in order, as the NAACP guy was saying, for the black issue to really get moved forward and be
yeah.
listened to without any racial prejudice. You can't be out burning stuff down.
It?
You
what
just can't
that,
do it.
You were saying Bill Cosby was talking about, and you said he took it from both sides when he was...
Bill Cosby. It was like a decade ago when Bill Cosby came out and said black guys need to start stepping it up because black women have 3 and 4 jobs. They're trying to raise kids, and he was really honing in on... But then black people got mad because they said you're taking the fight outside of our own house. That's a family fight. Keep it in-house.
Right.
And then he was like, guess what? White people already kind of know. It's not really so. I'm not spreading stuff out of turn. But the looting, I get it. I understand it because they think we don't care anymore. I understand spray painting F the police on the walls. But you're going to play into the same circular argument that keeps going on in that city since I've been a kid, which is the whites go, see, the blacks don't take care of anything. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And then only 10% are out doing that.
Yeah.
But that's what the news is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't show you the 90% that are saying don't do that.
The truth in America today is whatever's on the TV.
Yep.
Yeah.
Until you're there. I just want to know why the cops won't release the video.
Yeah.
Where's the deal?
Yeah, exactly.
And there must be one kid that had an iPhone. Where's that kid? I want that kid. I want so bad for the, and maybe right. maybe the cop is right. I don't know. I doubt it.
Yeah.
But I want to see the video.
Yep. 20 minutes after the hour, we continue Mimosas with Madison.
Madigan.
Madigan. Why do I keep saying that?
I don't know.
Maybe I'm getting a contact drunk. All right.
Are you sure there wasn't some champagne in your emergency?
Maybe Kathleen Madigan slipped it in there. All right.
Maybe.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEPH-12. Stephanie Miller.
I'm so fancy. You already know I'm in the fast lane. From LA to Tokyo.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show with comedian Kathleen Madigan, live in studio all 3 hours. Oh, by the way,
what?
We've been talking about race in Missouri, where Kathleen is from, the tragedy for comedy of Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaret in Madison says, don't forget to discuss Victoria Jackson's spectacular fizzle as a candidate in Tennessee.
That's right.
All of our themes magically coming together. Racism, tragedy for comedy.
She only got like 100 votes or so.
She got like 100 votes.
Really?
Yeah. She was running for a county supervisor or something.
Would you mind, for those that may have missed it last time, the story of you doing comedy with Victoria Jackson, you, Louis Black. Who else was in the comedy van?
John Panette.
Yeah.
And I believe Greg Giraldo. Did I say the word she said on air?
No,
you can't say that word.
Right. I knew that her husband was a cop in Miami. For some reason, she's always liked me. There's some Missouri connection or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I've always just, I didn't know that
everyone
she had
you.
Flipped her lid. I just thought she was a Saturday Night Live lady. I don't know what's going on with her tea party. Not even. It's
right.
not. That's an insult to the tea party. It's just bananas. She's just bananas. And I said, hi, Victoria. Hi, Kathleen. It's always very and she goes, I go, are you still living in Miami? She goes, yeah, but we're going to have to leave soon. It's getting very bad. I said, yeah, I don't like that town. I feel like everybody's on drugs, and I could always get punched in the face. I don't like all the drugs. She goes, no, it's not the drugs. It's the ends. And use the word.
Yeah.
In a van with all, and we were right
the
then
N-word.
Pulling up to
right.
our venue, and we all got out of the van, and Lou goes, did she just say that? And we all said nothing. I said, well, Lou, you got to give a 10-minute shock delay. I can't believe she said it. I don't even know how to respond to it. It was so outrageous. Like, first of all, FYI, there's really not even that many black people in Miami, Victoria. I thought you were, if you were going to pick on people, I thought you were going to say it's Cubans or something
yeah.
where you would go, oh, sure, the Cuban.
I was just
be that racist, and it's the wrong race. Like, she's
I was
a
just
racist.
Picturing this entire comedy van of Springtime for Hitler faces.
Yeah, we all just went. And the driver's like, you're here, guys. We didn't even realize we were that the van had stopped. I'm like, we're at the venue. Open the door. Get out before this gets even weirder. That was horrible. That was horrible. We should have said something, Louis. You never shut up. Why didn't you say something? It was just shocking. It was shocking. And I thought, wow. So then I started looking her up online, and then I saw all the cuckoo videos.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think she wants, there was a lot of racist stuff and just crazy.
Yeah.
But when it doesn't even make sense. Like, I went to a club in a long time ago, Virginia. I believe it was Richmond. And the club manager guy kept saying that he was really glad I wasn't a black comic, because they had a black comic the week before, and things were just kind of out of hand, and he doesn't understand that because they have a black waitress, and she's lovely. Well, then I get to the club all week long. I never see a black girl. And I go, where's the black waitress you were talking about? I'd like to meet her. He goes, right there. It was an Indian girl.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
They don't even know. You don't even know the race of what you're talking about.
Oh, boy.
Literally real life on the road when it comes to racism blows your mind. But you'll never hear any of this on TV because people can't.
Right.
If you say any of it, then it belongs to me. And it's like, no, I'm telling you what's happening. I'm not saying it's right.
You know who just said it on TV? Kathleen Madigan on Free Speech TV.
That's right.
We're on TV.
I'm no Wolf Blitzer, but
29 minutes after the hour. Charlie Pierce and Kathleen Madigan as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm like that woman on the Food Network whose husband only comes home on the weekends, and she spends the rest of her time eating and drinking with her gay friends.
Her name is
Stephanie Miller,
and you will never be like her.
It's Kathleen Madigan, 10 feet tall. Someone sent a poster.
Oh, yeah, look at me. I'm a giant!
You're playing somewhere.
Somewhere.
Somewhere illustrious. Oh, on the Strand.
The Strand.
That's something.
Oh, in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I think.
There you
I
go.
Believe.
All right. Kathleen Madigan, Mondays and with it, no, it's not. It's Tuesdays.
It's Mimosas
I'm
with
not
Madigan.
Drunk. She is. It's Mimosas with Madigan.
It's early.
Okay. And also, speaking of fun.
Oh,
okay.
That's right.
Yes, speaking of right.
There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, political columnist for Esquire.com.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Good morning, Charlie Pierce.
Good morning to you, and good morning to the Madigan lass.
Good morning. That was nice. Well, I would like to wake up to that every day, just when I get out of bed. Good morning, Madigan lass.
She wants to hear it every morning, Charlie. Well, we were saying, what a day to have Kathleen here, right? She obviously did comedy with Robin Williams in Iraq,
sure.
And it's... Wow, we were saying, Charlie, we were talking about earlier whether, and you cover all the horrible news every day, you know, that are people that have depression already, like Robin Williams, are they more impacted by what's happening in the world, or, you know?
Oh, I think so much of it is biochemical that I don't know that it has much to do with, I mean, it can't help, obviously, but I think so much of it is biochemical and the mysteries of the brain that I'm not sure you're getting it on the news. I mean, to me, I mean, just as a fan, I'm somebody who tries to be funny on paper anyway, there was Richard Pryor and Robin Williams and then a 5 million way tie for second place.
Yeah.
And I think they were just so far ahead of everybody else that, you know, it's a hard day to be funny, but somehow you feel obligated to be funny, you know?
Yeah, it's appropriate to be funny.
Yeah, I mean, in his honor, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, Charlie.
I just remember that when Bill Graham died, they had a memorial service for him in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, and Robin Williams was the first act on before the bands and everything. And he came out, I'll never forget it. He said, Bill's dead, and Jesse Helms doesn't even have a cold. So, adapt that to current circumstances,
sure,
if you will.
Yeah. I was just thinking that I assume his funeral is going to be in San Francisco, huh?
That was his
hometown. Yeah, but lately too, which has been nice for all the stand-ups anyway. Like for John Panette, there was one in New York and one in L.A. So I would imagine San Francisco, and then one in L.A. and maybe one in New York, because people can't, you know, everybody wants to be part of it, but we all can't maybe be there that day.
Charlie, what was your favorite Robin Williams movie? We've all been.
Well, I mean, I've got a local interest in Good Will Hunting, so it's hard to get past that. I mean, I've been to the L Street Tavern. I've been, you know, you sat in the Public Gardens talking to him, talking to Matt Damon and stuff. So I think it would be that one. Although there aren't many things in movies that are funnier than the first 5 minutes on the air of Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah.
And we have a connection to that because,
a little radio thing. Yeah.
Morning radio geeks like us. What's the other one that I'd forgotten until yesterday? Dead Poets Society, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
It was all over Twitter.
Yeah. That probably would have to be my favorite.
And a lot of people were mentioning What Dreams May Come yesterday.
Yeah, I never saw it.
I never saw it either, but apparently it's really poignant, especially for what happened
now
yesterday.
Charlie, interesting, and Kathleen Madigan, we retweeted a picture of her in the helicopter with Robin Williams going to do comedy in Iraq, and so now Kathleen's having I'm like, really? She's like, all these cities that we were in, like, now we're in again. I mean, it really is incredible. And she was saying, you know, these scenes we saw of them airdropping and taking some of the Yazidi people out in a helicopter. That's exactly the helicopter that Kathleen was in, the shooting your way in, shooting your way out. And you're like, really? We're back here again, right?
Yeah, maybe kicking over the hornet's nest wasn't such a good idea after all.
Yeah, I quoted you as I do, but I quoted you in your absence yesterday because your piece was great when you talk about the Bush family. You say with which long-term moral debt of the extended Bush family would you like to discuss first? The one that Junior locked the country into by kicking over the hornet's nest in order to drain the swamp, or the one Poppy ran up by selling the Kurds down the river in 1991? And you make the point, if there's one family that best symbolizes the historic price paid by the people of Iraq by Western bungling, it's the Bush family.
That will be forgotten in the rush to blame the current president for everything.
Right.
I honestly, this is one I'm completely stumped with, except I know I don't want American troops back there. But other than that, I mean, these seem like really bad actors.
You gave as honest an analysis as I've seen anybody. You just said the whole thing's a damnable mess and there's no good solution. This is a murderous, a religious fanaticism run amok. And as you were saying, a lot of times we can't even grasp what it's all about and what's this sect now and what's... And it exactly goes back to the point that why did we ever get involved over here in the first place?
Well, I think there's a lot. There's a lot that goes into that, but primarily it's a three-letter word beginning with O and ending in L.
Yeah. Well, you say there's absolutely no indication. There's no constituency in the U.S. for another large American military commitment in Iraq. There's no indication any other country will step up, and that's not because of the president's alleged lack of quote-unquote leadership. It's because America's credibility in that part of the world was drained to dry over the last half century. So you're right, Charlie. Your guess is as good as mine. What do we do now? As you say, what the president's already done, you think is beyond reproach. I mean,
I'm not as worried about mission creep as a lot of other people are. But that having been said, you know, sooner or later, it's time for yourselves and your friends and neighbors to step up.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Saudis and Jordan are really worried about these guys, let them do it. I mean, it's time for the Iraqis to do it. If they'd rather slaughter each other than build a nation, then all anybody else can do is just pen it in and hope it doesn't spread. I feel the same way about Afghanistan. Sooner or later, you have to decide to be a country.
Yeah,
maybe Iraq isn't going to be a country. Maybe Iraq isn't even going to exist.
Well, I hate to say it because you have a piece about Rand Paul, but I've started lately going, yeah, maybe we should just cut off all aid to everybody. Like, why? But, I mean, you seriously do start to think, like, what? It's going to be a mess no matter what we do, so why are we getting involved in all this stuff? Because
I think there's a great distance between foreign aid and what people may or may not want us to do in Iraq. I mean,
right.
Charlie, did you see the thing on Frontline that was like the two-hour, here's from the beginning to now of the decisions made in Iraq?
Yeah, I believe I did, actually.
Because at the one part they were saying, critiquing Obama, saying Malachi was a moron and he wasn't ready for all of our troops to go home and that we should have left him there a little longer. And I wanted to scream at the television, for how long? Because what you really mean is forever.
Right. Yeah.
Because if it's a month from now or a year from now, it's still
and when
is have the same result.
Right. And Charlie, when is enough of a response for John McCain and Lindsey Graham, for instance? What's enough? Like what? How much more?
Well, there is. I mean, for John McCain and Lindsey Graham, there's never enough.
Lots.
If we had elected the other guy in 2008. We'd have been bombing in Egypt and in Libya and in Syria and, you know, who knows where else. Maybe Ukraine. The problem with the argument that we have to, you know, that we have to demonstrate American resolve is nobody cares anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody cares how resolute.
Well, and by the way, you have a piece about Rand Paul, and Chris, you said this the other day, mm-hmm. and you're like, at first I liked Rand Paul's stance on whatever, and like, he's a typical politician. The headline today, Charlie, Rand Paul suddenly goes very silent on U.S. airstrikes in Iraq. He's had no comment at all. He's had no stance, you know, the office didn't comment on his stance after multiple requests. From media,
he tries to portray himself as a principled libertarian, but then now he's just proving himself to be a typical politician.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, there's a couple of things about it. Number one, that's true, and number two, the guy really isn't that bright. If you get him, you know, that's why I invented the 5-minute rule. for any member of the Paul family. You
listen
to him for 5 minutes, and you think, yeah, this guy's really making sense. And as soon as it gets to the five-minute mark, he says something that's either so stupid or so detached from reality, you wonder why you've been listening to the guy at all.
I quoted you on the five-minute rule yesterday as regards Ron Paul saying he thinks the United States government might have been behind the downing of the Malaysian airliner.
Oh, yeah, he's not running for president anymore, so he can really let the old flag fly. I think all you need to know about Rand Paul is that video of him running away from the two kids. I mean, that's just...
Yeah.
First of all, he's lucky somebody didn't have to Heimlich him.
Yes.
And, you know, the guy wants to be president more than he wants to be Rand Paul.
Well, you say, I mean, the headline of your piece is Rand Paul tests the limits of political cowardice. In an interview, he said he had sympathy for the DREAM Act kids and conceded, I'm actually a moderate on immigration. Then you said Paul was seen walking away after Dreamers accosted King, said he had time to stop and grab my beer, so I wasn't in that much of a hurry to get to my next interview. But he said, I'm not interested in being filmed and being berated by people who broke the law. And you talk about, like, typical weasel speak, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Steve King stood up and engaged those guys.
Right.
You know, and Steve King is, you know, 10 pounds of crazy in a 5-pound bag. I mean,
right.
Regardless of whether or not he's running the Republican Party on immigration now or not, which he is, by the way.
Yeah.
He stood up and talked to them.
Right.
And, I mean, the other guy was brave Sir Robin.
Yeah, and you said in four or five days, Rand Paul will likely reverse all of these reversals of positions. He will feel very strongly all three ways, and also free pot. but it's true. I mean, it's the same flip-flopping Mitt Romney did on every issue, right?
Well, pretty much. Libertarian. I've always thought libertarianism was more of a style than an actual substantive policy position for everyone. So, I mean, I think that's the niche that he's going to try to occupy. And I think that, you know, it's going to force him into some really weird reversals of position.
Yeah. No wonder he was wearing that that ice cream vendor shirt.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He needs a style consultant very, very bad.
He really does.
And I say this as someone who worked at GQ for 6 years. So.
And he needs a different hair product.
I think that horse is out of the barn, actually. I think it's not one of those trademark things. Either that or he's getting some kind of a check from a hair weave place.
If he got a haircut, people wouldn't recognize him.
Right.
Well, he came to one of my meet and greets, and I had really big heels on, and I was taller than him. And to see the top of that mess, I was just like, oh, dude, let me help you with some different products.
And you are how tall, Kathleen?
5'1". But I probably had a 3-inch heel on, so I was 5'4".
Our listeners researched it, Charlie, and it was a boy's shirt. That shirt he was wearing is only available
in boys.
It only
comes in boys. Right. Yeah.
He's small. Yeah, he's very tiny.
That's hilarious.
He's very tiny.
All right. Love you, Charlie.
What is that? In Sears in the please kick my ass back to school product?
Hey, I shopped in that section when I was a kid.
It's a shirt made entirely of gum. All right.
I had to go to Catholic school where we all dressed like that, and I got my ass kicked anyway.
See you next week, Charlie. Love you.
Thanks,
Gary.
All right. Bye, honey. 46 minutes after the hour, we roll along, and ooh, she is mimosing it up over there, Kathleen Madigan.
Going slow.
Okay. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Kathleen Madigan, comedian extraordinaire, live in studio with us. I've not even wanted to go into the comment sections, you know, about Robin Williams, because I don't know why. As I was saying, I've been dealing with death a lot in my personal life, and just I don't know why. I hadn't met him like you have, and you've worked with him, but I just was emotional, like a lot of people. It just really was sad, and I thought, you know what's interesting, Chris? For a moment, I tuned into Fox. I don't know why. I was just dialing around when other people went to commercial, and Shep Smith brought this up.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, I went to one of my favorite websites, and I'm thinking, okay, Fox News, which, I don't know, what's he talking about, WorldNet Daily, something, but he was talking about the negative comments.
Yeah.
Because that's what I thought, and that happens anytime someone from Hollywood dies. You remember Whitney Houston, we talked about this. I mean... There are any number of just horrible sort of heartless. And anyway, Shep Smith was saying, and I was surprised to see that someone said, oh, I haven't liked anything I saw him in a long time. Good riddance. And he said, you know, I don't understand why there's so many haters out there on a day like this. And you were just talking.
Yeah, I blacked some guy. I wrote what I wrote. You know, it was very sad stuff. And he was like, yeah, I guess. But, you know, if you off yourself, you don't go to heaven, you know, straight to hell. And then I just flipped it over to seeing it's, and it really did say hashtag Tea Party, hashtag Christian. And I'm like, okay, even if you believe that, is this where you say it on Twitter?
Yeah.
You know, people just, every comment section, though, breaks down to religion. Or my favorite, and I don't know who posts this, no matter what the topic is, they'll go, do you want to make money in your pajamas? I have a way. I have a way for you to make. It's in every article. Yeah. The article,
and by the way,
the
you have made money in your pajamas.
And I do make money in my pajamas. I want to write back. Already got that one. Check.
Any comedy writing job she's ever been offered, can I wear pajamas? Yes.
Yeah,
and do it from home?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But the comment boards, Lou always yells at me for reading them, but I do like to see the breakdown. But it does wear. I have to take breaks.
People
are just really mean.
Ironically, for someone that struggled with depression like Robin, it makes you depressed. I remember the Whitney Houston. I thought, oh, my God, I can't even read any further. Just like, oh, another dead, you know, junky N-word. Like, you're like, really? Are we just that mean as a country, or is it all racial, or is it all political, or you know?
You wonder, like, were there always this many angry people that were just hateful, or is it because I think they were always there, it's just now they can say it, but they can hide behind the handle of monkey ass 1964. I would, how many of them would have ever had the guts to say it to someone's face?
Yeah.
Not nearly as much, because we didn't, you didn't live with it.
Social media
life.
Makes you awfully brave, right?
Yeah.
But I have to be me. That's the non-trade-off. I'm me,
right.
But nobody, you know, I love bananas is not, I don't know who that is, and I don't have the time to go find out or care, but it's kind of one-sided as far as I got to, everybody knows it's me.
Right. By the way, so a lot of, you know, people talking about, we talked about various comedians, and somebody was talking about, you know, do people feel more deeply or why, you know. But interesting, yesterday, Tracy Morgan's lawyer was on the Today Show, and he said he's still struggling. And again, as someone that has also obviously struggled with addiction before this, the accident, he said he's struggling, but he's a fighter. He's had an issue that he's fought through, and he's fighting hard. He noted that rumors that Morgan was either dead or had lost a leg, and he said now the rumors that he's doing great. He said none of those things are true or accurate. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, that's got to be a long road back from an accident that severe.
Well, especially if you have addiction issues. And then in the hospital, they're probably giving you all kinds of pain medication that is addictive.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that's what happened to him, but I could see that be a slippery. If you put me in a hospital and the only thing that could help me was cigarettes, and then I just started chain smoking, I'd be like, yeehaw! But I'd be right back smoking. I mean, it wouldn't be that big of a leap. Oh, really? Cigarettes will make me feel better? I knew it.
I told you.
I've been trying to tell everybody.
No, my friend that just died of the accidental drug overdose, that I talked to a friend, because she'd moved back to Oklahoma. I'd just sort of fallen out of touch, not, you know, on purpose, but she said that's how it started for her. She'd had injuries at work. She'd hurt her back and her ankle, and she said she had already had substance problems, and they prescribed a lot of stuff for her, and she never kicked it.
I can see. I had two teeth pulled in the game. I've root canals, I never took the Vicodin. I never needed it, but I took it for the teeth. Wow. I was like, no wonder people paid $10 a pill in the Abbey for this. God, it's just, if you're a hyper person, Vicodin is lovely, because it just, you just go, ah. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
See, I believe I had tried it once when I was having some kind of surgery, and it made me violently ill. So that's probably good.
You probably didn't eat a sandwich. Gotta eat a little something on the belly.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see quickly becoming addicted to that. I did not, because I'm like, okay, I don't need another, I don't need to be in a theater somewhere going, damn, do you have any teeth problems? Do you have Vicodin? Do you have any extra Vicodin? But I could see where you could go,
But no, and a lot of people have that story. I think Matthew Perry talks about, you know, that it is sad for people that have already struggled with addiction, and then it's, you know, they're prescribed this stuff. Yeah. And, you know, this is what the friend was saying, is she had pills stashed everywhere, and she frequently didn't know how much she'd taken, and she'd had a couple of accidental incidents before.
Sure.
This one, I'm sorry, Chris.
No, I was going to say, you know, I hate to bring him up, but Rush Limbaugh as well. He was prescribed it for a back problem. And, you know, he got hooked on OxyContin, so much so that he was sending his maid out to buy it for him.
You were saying, Kathleen, too, I think with, you know, Robin Williams, you were saying it's the deadly combination is depression and you have a substance thing that I think he obviously struggled with for a long time.
Right, because one's going to probably lead to the other, to the other, to the other. It's just it's a bucket full of problems. And, you know, how do you, it was like John Panette, the comedian. John had, where do we start with John?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He overeats. It's all addiction. It's addiction gone off the rails. And then other issues.
Right, you look at Chris Farley or John
where
Candy.
Where do you start?
Or,
I always said though about all my fat ones. I'm like, we start with the weight. Okay? I don't care how much blow we got to give John to get him down to 150, but let's do it. Then when he's skinny, because the weight will kill you most likely first. You don't see super old obese people.
Right.
You
Stephanie
do
Miller
see
show.
Super old smokers, though.
The Stephanie Miller Show would
shout out
to point
the
out that Kathleen Madigan is not a addiction expert. We don't necessarily recommend giving your fat friend
theory.
Blow. Okay. That was not professional advice. We continue with more. And just keep in mind, mimosas with Madigan on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, Kathleen Madigan is mimosa'd up. Hour three of mimosas with Kathleen Madigan, comedian extraordinaire, who did comedy with Robin Williams over in Iraq. We TMZ is reporting that he committed suicide by hanging himself inside his home. They say their sources say the family heard nothing about a suicide note. It appears the comedian did not leave one. We're told Robin hung himself inside the main house, not the garage. Law enforcement will hold a press conference today at 11 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah.
TMZ reporting, as we previously reported, Robin had been struggling with a deep depression and went to rehab last month. People familiar with his condition said he seemed almost too far gone back then. Mm. You know, and again, we all know because we're out here in Hollywood and we know people on sets and we know people on lots and, you know, I mean, that's some of what you've heard, but you'd hope that it wasn't true. A lot of people knew because he was so open about struggling with, you know, substance abuse, certainly, you know, and depression over the years that I think that people were still shocked. I mean, I think particularly that it was suicide, that it was, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that it would go that far and that would be the choice. Even if that's not that common. With addiction and depression, it was a left field. Thing,
right,
I thought.
Right.
I did get mad though when people go, "Oh, all you people in LA, you're all crazy. You're all, everybody's liberal. Or you're all doing drugs. You're all doing this." First of all, I worked at a bar in St. Louis. You want to know how many drunks I know that are not famous?
Yeah.
And they are not liberal. They are just drunks on a bar stool, and I was in charge of them.
Yeah.
For 10 years, and I'm sure half of them are dead now.
Well, you look at the crystal meth, you know, a phenomenon all over the country. I mean, it's just No, and that's what we were saying is, sadly, and that's what I was saying is the first place I heard about it was on Fox News, Shep Smith talking about the really hateful comments about Robin Williams on some, you know, websites on the comment section.
Yeah.
Speaking of people in Hollywood, Kevin sent me a great picture. He said, Steph, as a boom operator, I did Cadillac Man with Robin. He was a serious actor, very funny, and a real sweetheart, and it's a picture of them. together on the set. So, I mean, that's, you know, Kathleen, same thing you say is that, you know, it's so what nice. Everybody said. He was the nicest man in the world.
It was like and Greg Giraldo, too, like that comedian where you just go, there are comedians that are addicts that become obnoxious and hard to be around. And then there's ones that you go, he's hurting himself. But he's still so nice to other people. Like,
right.
Those are the ones, you know, that you just go, oh, man, not that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's the same. It's his joke, basically, Robin's joke. But it's like, there are comedians that if I saw it on the news, I'd go, oh, but not really. Okay? Okay? Robin, not one of them.
Yeah.
Not one of them.
No, I mean, that's true. My friend and I had a conversation about that the other day. Is there, you know, sometimes... when there's substances, the people are just, you know, holes in the first place. And I know a couple of those people, and you're just like, and it's not that you don't feel empathy, but I think there is, you know, I don't know why. I always felt like you could see it in his eyes. As funny as he was, you could see the sort of the sadness or something. And it
pretty
just,
blue eyes.
Yeah.
His eyes were really, really pretty.
Well, and you were just talking, and by the way, the Stephanie Miller Show does not advise Kathleen Madigan. As a life coach.
As your sober coach.
No. Listen, because she said that she has dealt with friends that she's said the weight is the first thing that you recommended them doing blow for several months to get the weight off. We do not recommend.
Obese. I'm not saying chubby. I don't care if you're chubby.
But you have to, it's like deal with one addiction at a time. Or
yeah, we're going to deal with one thing at a time, and we're going to use AIDS to get you through the first one. So let's use a little blow to get you out of the fatty category. Then when you're in the too much blow category, we're going to give you some pot, and that's going to bring you down from the blow. And then finally, we're going to get you to Bud Lights on a Sunday.
The Stephanie Miller Show, once again,
Bud Light on a Sunday.
Does not recommend what Kathleen Madigan is recommending. The Stephanie Miller Show apologizes. But
saying,
we have been feeding Kathleen Madigan mimosas since 6 a.m. this morning Pacific.
Although that would probably work.
These are people I love. This is just a step. It's my step down program.
Right.
I buy it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should open up clinics like Jenny Craig.
The Vicodin got me to quit smoking. No, I only took it for two days.
It's true. You have shed addictions. You used to, remember?
Yeah.
She used to go smoke on the roof of
that's
the old
right.
building every commercial break.
Every commercial
just
break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you need a little help to get off one addiction, you have to decide which ones are harming me the most,
you were saying
and then
that,
take them down.
Right, you were saying that Lewis Black, who knew Robin very well as well, was saying that because you were saying the fact that he made it to 63 with a combination of depression and addictions, but you were saying he had Lou said he has a system, and we were saying he was in great shape. He was a bicyclist. I mean, and he certainly went through periods, I think, of sobriety. We were saying he was with John Belushi the night he died, and he talked a lot about how he went cold turkey, you know, because he had a kid on the way and, you know, and then managed it, I guess, for quite a while. Right?
I think it's managing it, and then it goes haywire, and then they manage again and haywire. And that's a long battle. You know, there's so many addicts in my family that they have to battle it. Sometimes the fight is just too long and too hard, and it's just too much. It's too tiring. I get it. I'm not saying that's the greatest decision, but I can understand if your whole life you're fighting every addiction in front of your face, you just get tired.
Yeah. Well, and Chris, you were saying he talked publicly, too, about money stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said whether it's a combination of he had ex-wives, he had clearly addiction stuff that he talked about. But, but you know, I mean, you're right. Maybe it's like getting tired that he had to do this latest series because he needed money.
He was open about having to do the crazy ones because he needed the money.
Yeah.
You know, and that didn't go as long as he thought it would go.
Maybe that was that's why I liked it.
Well, you were saying it takes a lot to keep that whole kind of circus going when you're at that level. And that's why you were saying you have a very small traveling circus.
I have a very small circus. And my if the circus fell apart tomorrow, nothing really changes. I could still go be a waitress at Perkins and this whole thing is manageable.
Or at Stuart Anderson's.
Stuart Anderson's was right very near where the riots are in St. Louis.
Oh,
that's where I work.
Which Kathleen Madigan also discussed this morning very coherently for the amount of mimosas she's had.
Thank you.
A very, very, I thought, in-depth treatise on race and what's happening in St.
Louis.
Yeah,
I'll probably get home and get hate comments about that, too, which is why I won't read my comments now for 3 days. Whenever I do show, I'm like, I don't know if I really want to like that. Some of them
you're like,
I
look,
do.
It's 3 hours. I don't know
do,
what I said.
I do. They're mostly nice. And it's not that I need to be.
All right, if you say I said to tell your fat friend to do blow. Okay, if you say I said that, then maybe I did. But
well, you know, we're right next to Sirius Patriot on the Sirius XM dial.
Maybe
so sometimes
what,
they,
They Maybe that's what you the, heard.
Yeah.
But what I meant... by the way, we were talking about a lot of truckers have SiriusXM. We were on channel 127.
Yep.
Woot. But interesting, because we also were threading in the whole Tracy Morgan thing, and his lawyer saying yesterday that he's really struggling. I mean,
yeah,
he's
I don't know what that means.
Well, he's had addiction stuff as well, but he's also, you know, he's saying that he's struggling. He said he's a fighter. He's had issues before that he's brought through, and he's fighting hard. And we were just talking about, who knows, like, how many people have started by getting painkillers, and they already had substance problems. But anyway, the other trucker tie-in here is that obviously they're suing Walmart. They say this guy was up for 25 hours, and his lawyer said he plans to show in court that these long hours are part of the culture at Walmart. He said that's what they set up. They have to make sure that this doesn't happen.
It is part of the culture, because my dad had, Kate, when he was still practicing law, that came across a lot. The Walmart problem. They also, I guess I could say it. They part of their policy is you lease the truck. They make
right.
you
mm-hmm.
do it.
Yep.
So now you're not a Walmart employee.
Wow.
You're right. We're farming it out, but technically, so they avoid responsibility. They make
right.
you take the insurance out on yourself. So like I go rent a car, pay
right.
for all that insurance, and if anything happens, it's my problem.
That's right.
It's just part of how can they not pay for anything? How can
yeah.
they not be responsible for anything? It's if I was Tracy Morgan, I would sue Walmart till I owned all of them.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
after
exactly.
that.
I know. The other thing I was thinking of is we were saying that Robin Williams almost – we were talking about all the different issues that went into this, and he had the heart surgery, which you're saying that also is well-known can lead to depression.
It changes brain chemistry.
Right, but then
yeah.
we also were saying, who knows, clearly cocaine can have an effect on you know, a lot of people that have heart problems later. It that could have been connected to that addiction. But my point in all this is that Dick Cheney is still alive. For some reason,
yeah.
Robin Williams,
yeah.
a national treasure,
mm-hmm.
and Dick Cheney is still
alive. Talking. Still talking, too.
Yeah.
He's giving interviews.
He won't
apparently not depressed, will not shut up about what is wrong. Oh, he has a lot of thoughts about Iraq now.
I trace most of those problems to the Obama administration.
Of course.
They've been in office a long time now, going on 6 years.
Mm.
They can't blame George Bush anymore.
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
Although he's tried repeatedly, I think he's been a failure as a president.
Just because... You see, Bush got us into Iraq. That's why that's crazy to even imply that there might be anything.
He blew up the country, broke it, and now we're still trying to fix it.
Right. He had some more thoughts.
They're dramatically cutting back the defense budget year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrible precedent to set because it's going to cripple us in future years. When you make decisions about the defense budget, and especially when you're cutting back on it, you are... Mm. crippling your successors as president because they won't have the force they need when they have to deal with a crisis.
Did Dick Cheney just say something about crippling your successors?
Yes.
You mean like leaving a big mess that
right.
then you someone else might have to clean up, like that sort of thing? That would be awful if somebody were to have done that. That'd be crazy. Oh, and then he listed off all the quote-unquote bad situations for the Obama administration, including the IRS.
Yeah.
Which is a complete non-scandal. Oh, and the Veterans Affairs scandals, which started under the Bush-Cheney administration.
Right. And which has been, it's being handled effectively by
right.
the Obama administration.
Right. So that guy, once again, Kathleen, still alive.
Still alive. Still ticking. Mm-hmm. How many hearts has he had?
24.
As many as a contractor can buy.
Yes.
Exactly. All right, 17 minutes after the hour. You know what, what is it? Kathleen Madigan has been drinking mimosas for 2 hours and 20 minutes. I would not miss the remaining 40 minutes of the
show. Slowly, though.
Because you can tell she's blurting out.
This is
right?
pacing. No, it's because I've been up since 1.
That's right.
I'm
yeah.
wide awake.
Yeah, there's no telling what's
going
to happen
next. Because
it's
new and on her body clock.
Yeah, yeah. Don't miss a minute. Okay. Stephanie Miller Show.
She's your human Prozac. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Oh, look, Kathleen Madigan. So happy that Fred is here. She's the first guest that ever has said, can we get the dogs back in here, please?
Yeah, I know.
They're amazing.
Because you said that's your main reason you want to retire. You can get a doggy.
Yep, I want a beagle.
Okay.
A psycho little beagle to match my psycho little personality.
Good luck rescuing your psycho beagle.
Angry black guy on Twitter says, hey guys, how can I get on Kathleen Madigan's rehab and weight loss program?
See, it resonates with some.
Yeah. Once again, the Stephanie Miller Show would like to apologize for those of you offended by Kathleen Madigan's life coach program. We do not recommend her as your sober coach, in that she recommends doing blow first if you are overweight.
To get the weight down.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying obese. There's a difference between being overweight and obese. Obesity will kill probably first, statistically saying. So what's your worst habit? We're going to get rid of that. Maybe we get another bad habit along the way. Right. But who's counting?
I get all my life coaching at spinning, as you know.
Yes, you do.
Oh, do you have any of my the horrible spinning music? Here, I'll do, because they tell you little stories. Here's one I just heard at spinning class. See, first of all, there's like what do you call it? If crystal meth had a sound.
I don't remember the name of that song. I'm sorry.
Can I get a what? Can
no,
I get
that's
a what?
Not the name of the song.
All right. Well, anyway, they're playing this really loud, and you're spinning your little bike, and then they'll turn the music down. Okay, and then they tell some story about some elder, some tribal elder, the son came to him, and I don't remember the whole story, because your heart rate is like, right, you're ready to pass out. But there's something about, there's two wolves inside everybody, and one is anger and fear and just jealousy, and the other wolf is, love and hopefulness and whatever. And the little boy says, which wolf wins? And then she said, whichever one you feed. Feed the right wolf! Feed the right wolf! Feed the right wolf! Feed the right...
Wow.
Right?
That's a
it's
lot.
It's like exercise with life coaching.
Oh.
I know.
Right? Feed the right wolf. You know why you're saying that? Because you're probably feeding the wrong wolf.
Probably. Which makes me cynical. That's probably the bad wolf.
Russell in Delaware, you're on with Kathleen. Hi, Russell.
How you doing, Steph?
Hello, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak on Robin Williams to talk about when I noticed he went from just being like the funniest guy in the room to recognizing his true genius.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that happened is, well, if you play one character that people are very fond of, they don't ever let you grow beyond it. You can ask Nimoy about that.
Right.
But Mork and Mindy had just been off the air for about a year when Robin Williams was in this film called Moscow on the Hudson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's...
He actually learned Russian. He can speak Russian.
Oh,
he threw that out in Afghanistan. Yeah. I was like, what is happening in the lower bunk? What are you talking about down there? And he did. He learned Russian for that movie, Moscow on the Hudson.
Actually, that's when you think about it, that's... would have been amazing enough a story that he ever got past Mork. I mean, most people that make it that are that huge, they never do. But the fact that he had such a career, that he so transcended that. Right?
And he hated his first movie, which was Popeye. He didn't like to talk about Popeye. But I thought he was great in Popeye. The movie itself was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, you gotta be into Popeye.
Yeah.
I didn't like the real Popeye. More or less someone playing
was
Popeye.
Was Rob Williams actually in the lower bunk? Were you the top bunk? He was the bottom one?
We switched a lot. They tried to give me and his assistant our own, because she was the only other woman, tried to give us our own place, but sometimes that didn't work out, so you just had to bunk up with... I always took the tops.
Right.
You're
a top, is
well,
what you're saying?
Well, really, I'm just the youngest by 25 years, and I can still climb. Like a monkey. I'm like, I'm fine. I'll take the top. All you old farts can go on the bottom. So
nobody
all
had
you
got
to do is fall over and you're
nobody
in bed.
Else had the knees to be top bunk.
Exactly.
Right.
Both of them, real knees, no heart surgeries.
What? Did you do Iraq and Afghanistan with him or just Afghanistan?
Yeah, both.
Oh,
yeah.
Both.
That trip, I think, was mostly Afghanistan. Which is much more horrifying.
Yeah.
Really, it makes Iraq look like Vegas. Afghanistan is really... And it's weird over there because all the people that are seriously involved go, Afghanistan was really great in the late 60s. I'm like, well, then do it again.
Yeah.
Whatever y'all were doing,
And it was so awesome.
Have you noticed
do it again?
Kathleen Madigan is Forrest Gump today on the show. Have you noticed that she's in every major news story? There's some connection.
Yes.
She is there everywhere.
She probably has Ebola and hasn't told us.
She Rand Paul and his wife came to her last thing. She's actually seen
that
Rand Paul
true.
In person.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I don't know most politicians. I don't think I've
ever
had any politician.
And you can confirm that he's 3 feet 11? Or
yep. And he had on Prince lifts
heels.
In cowboy boots.
Yeah. The Prince heels. The big platform things.
Yeah. If I knew it was going to be...
They're claiming... What are they claiming is? 5'8"?
That's what his official bio says.
And Kathleen's 5'1", and she says no.
Yeah, computer says no.
No.
You saw the top of his head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I saw the bad hair products.
Carol in Wisconsin, you're on with Kathleen. Hey, Carol.
Hey. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller. Discovered your show on vacation. I'm glad I can pick you up on the Internet. But anyway, I met Robin Williams on the set of What Dreams May Come, and he is just a super sweet guy.
Yeah.
But the one thing I wanted to mention is nobody's reporting the elephant in the room, and that was, as brilliant as he suffered from bipolar disorder, a mental illness. Mm-hmm. So his mania funny highs were fueled by his bipolar disorder along with the highs, you know, come the deep lows. And he paid a huge price for his career, and I wish that would be reported. Because when you have bipolar disorder, you tend to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, and you know, when it's untreated. But the ultimate problem is bipolar, and I think we should have a conversation about that, you know, in the media. But nobody's saying that they... Because there's such a stigma.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that earlier, Kathleen. You are hammered. Look at you.
No, I was thinking... That's probably the case.
Well, we'll think that when we get back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
And she's freakishly strong. She's the reason you can't buy beer after the seventh inning at Dodger games.
Yeah. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. Kathleen Madigan, live in studio with us. Jeff tweets, quoting me, Kathleen Madigan is Forrest Gump today. She's in every news story. She's probably got Ebola.
No, Kathleen Madigan does not have Ebola.
No,
because Kathleen doesn't go to countries where I have to get shots before I go there.
You're a giver, but just
because you know
a point.
You have friends who are like, wouldn't it be great to go on a safari? No.
No.
Yeah. No.
How
that's
about
why
we go
I,
to the St. Louis Zoo.
Yeah, those Ebola doctors are way better people than me. In fact, if there was only enough serum for you know, one person, I would, as I said, I'd shove my friend in a wood chipper to get that. Yeah,
they're much better people than I would ever be.
I couldn't agree more.
That is true.
You know who else is? Speaking of dreamy hunky men, why, Bob Seska joins us now.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast.
You're cute and I love you, Bob Seska.
Bob's calling us from Hawaii. You Seska thing,
you Seska thing. Go ahead, Honolulu.
Good morning, Bob Seska.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. I am, Kathleen Madigan is involved in every news story, but she particularly worked with Robin Williams doing comedy for the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's just just when you thought there could be not one more bad news story, right, in the news?
Yeah. I got to tell you, I thought I'd wake up this morning and it'd be better. But I have to say, right at the top here, I'm still shaking. It's tough. It's like losing John Lennon especially for my generation. I mean, I came up right out of college into radio, and as a as a baby DJ, working part time at a full service AM radio station, I used to watch Good Morning Vietnam on a VHS tape until it wore out.
Sure,
There was one show that I did. It was a full service, mid market radio station. One show that I did where I did the entire show with the Good Morning Vietnam soundtrack.
Wow.
I wanted to be Adrian Cronauer, and I didn't do an imitation of that, but boy, I think I wrote on Facebook today that Robin Williams' characters, you wanted to know them. You wanted to sit down with them at the end of the movie and say, thank you for these stories, and then to give them a big hug.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so... I think that's why it's affecting us so much.
I was also a little bit a morning radio baby DJ back then, and I know the other thing everybody, because whatever profession you're in, every movie you like to be the geek that goes, well, he was really good, but that's not exactly how it happens in morning radio. You wouldn't ever.
Right.
She'd say, that was a little unrealistic, but whatever. He was good.
I'll still give it an A minus.
You know, we always had program directors like Lieutenant Hulk. I mean,
yes, that's true.
I can't tell you the number of notes sessions and air check sessions I sat in with no more coffee remarks. You know, like. It perfectly, Bruno Kirby perfectly embodied every program director I think we've ever had.
Or pig vomit, as played by
Paul Giamatti.
Yes, in the private parts. To give my SiriusXM colleague another plug. So Bob, I mean, everybody's been talking about that, their favorite Robin Williams movie. But I know what you mean. I said to Kathleen, I didn't know him, but I was really shaken up by it. And I think you're right. Maybe it's generational. Maybe it's, what was that first stand-up special, Kathleen, that was just so,
I forget what
was that, astounding. The Broadway one?
No, Robin? Bob, you know which one I mean? The very first one? His very first, like, stand-up special that was just, I remember he was, like, crawling all over the crowd, and there were all these celebrities in the crowd, and it was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think that spoke a lot to his range. I mean, as a comedian, I think very few comedians can make that transition into acting and to drop the shtick and become, and just be so vulnerable and expose his emotions. I think the fact that he wore his emotions on his sleeve was both his genius and his curse. And I think that's what made him endearing in all of his characters. No matter what kind of movie he was in, he always improved the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, as a comedian, you know, I think it was a required trait. I think you have to be a little crazy. I'm not speaking for Kathleen here, but
Kathleen is blindingly normal. It is really.
That's why I've always said I'm never gonna. You have to be more crazy than I'm capable of to reach a different plateau.
Yeah. Right.
I'm the lady at the end
Me
of the bar.
I'm crazy as I am.
Yeah,
I am
just
not crazy
the lady
enough.
At the end of the bar.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm that lady. But I'm never gonna be. He was. More of everything, and
I mean, it takes a special kind of person though to put yourself on a stage in front of a strange audience. Really easy for me or for Stephanie or for anyone else in radio or podcasting or what have you to sit behind a microphone in a you know, a hermetically sealed studio, but to expose yourself in front of an audience is one thing, and then to expose it with such manic sincerity, and then to do that all over again on film, take after take after take, where, you know, it's just you're an exposed nerve the way Robin Williams was in all these films. Even, you know, we watched What Dreams May Come last night. My God, what an incredible performance. You know, that takes a special kind of courage to do.
Well, and I don't know if you know, we just had a caller that was talking about, and I don't know whether he ever discussed being bipolar or, you know, what exactly, but, you know, Kathleen has also been talking, you know, Bob, about, you know, the combination of whether it's depression and or substance or, you know, self-medicating or what it is, but, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I've got all these people writing in, and this always comes up, and again, because a lot of stuff we don't know what he was taking or not taking, and they said, I had a 33-year-old friend, married, father of two, who committed suicide out of the blue after being put on antidepressant drugs. I was saying I had a friend that killed herself after going off Paxil. So, I mean, it's that's the other thing. Is just there's such a, I think, a larger discussion here about depression. And Kathleen was saying that some people it's just situational, but I think this was really chemical and very long-term for him.
Chronic.
Yeah.
It's chronic mental illness. Mm-hmm. And we also don't even have places where literally 30 years ago there were more places for addiction and chronic mental illness. There's nowhere to go anymore. Even if you're rich, you can go to Hazelden, but in 28 days you're out.
Right.
If you're poor, I don't know where you go. Nowhere, I guess. But there's no facilities for any of this.
And you were saying, I think he just had been at Hazelden again in July. But, you know, Bob, it is interesting. It's like on the surface, you go, wow, you're somebody incredibly, you know, incredibly successful, wealthy, beautiful wife. But I think that misunderstands, I guess, the nature of depression, right?
It misunderstands the whole thing of mental illness and or addiction. That stuff doesn't come into play. It doesn't matter that they have a lot of money or a beautiful wife. You can have a better addiction with more money. You know what I mean? Right, like you can buy more drugs. Yeah. That's just a ratio thing. But yeah, it doesn't matter if he loved his kids. You know what I mean? People are going, well, you commit suicide. You know, no, it has nothing to do with that. Neither one are connected at the time.
Yeah.
I know he loved his kids. That's all he talked about was his kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just mental illness.
Yeah. I know. Well, yeah. Go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think my colleague Chaz Pazienza from the Daily Banter hit the nail on the head today when he wrote about Robin Williams and depression and substance addiction and things like that. That with depression, it's not an absence of feeling. It's an overwhelming amount of feeling. You're feeling too much instead of not enough.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times substance abuse goes along with that. To either feed that or to try to tamp it down by self-medicating. And I think that might have been one of Robin Williams' demons, obviously so.
Yeah, well, and Kathleen, you were saying sometimes it's situational depression. Your mom could give you a list.
Yeah, I mean, if you said, why are you so upset today? I'll tell you why I'm upset. That's not chronic mental illness. That's just a lady that is not happy with what's going on in this house today. And there's a big difference.
Yes, there is.
Or, you know, oh, I'm depressed because my friend John Panette died. It's going to take me 2 days to get my brain back right. And it did.
Yeah.
But that's a situation. There's a reason I can pinpoint when Bob's talking about the overwhelmingness of depression. They can't even unravel it. They're overwhelmed, and you say, what's wrong? I don't know.
No, look,
what can I do to help? I don't know.
Every human being, I think, has thought about depression. I certainly, or is about suicide. I certainly have. But I think, you know, Bob, that's the part of it that in some ways it's always so sad is you think you never know what's right around the corner. And that seems to be the part of really chronic depression is you never think it's going to end or there's going to be anything better that's going to be around the corner, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's from what I understand and from what I've experienced with people I know, it's something that's just completely debilitating. I mean, you simply cannot function.
They cannot function.
Unless you are medicated, unless you're getting help, and even then it's a struggle.
Louis Anderson
not to go overly political with it, but, I mean, thank God on one hand, but on the other hand, just recently has mental illness been included in what health insurance will cover.
Yeah.
I mean, just in the past few years.
Yeah, and you're right. We shouldn't talk about it only when there's a mass shooting, you know, in terms of mental health, right? Kathleen, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, Louis Anderson put a thing on Twitter, which I thought was very insightful, and it's sad. He said suicide is exceptionally sad because it's a permanent solution to what could have been a temporary problem.
That's what I mean.
They don't see it, or maybe they do see it as it, but it's the 20 billionth time they've had a temporary problem, and they're tired of it.
Like, my situational depression is I'm not married to Bob Seska.
There you go. Mine is...
And I am lonely.
Mine is there's only some of that champagne left.
I've got
and
more.
And Fred left.
I've got
That's
more. That's
I'm
never
sad
a situation
about. Fred
here.
Has left the room.
Be careful what you wish for, Seth.
Yeah.
By the way, we didn't get to your great piece, but just the theme too, because you sort of mentioned mental health, and you said Obama Democrats are generally fact-based, reason-based, while GOP denies science. I mean, it is an interesting thing that's happened to our politics, right? In terms of you were talking about the president's comments, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just can't help but to take a look at any given website right now or any newspaper and realize that America is kind of going nuts right now. And there are numerous reasons for it. But, you know, I'm surprised I actually haven't seen on Twitter regarding Robin Williams, thanks, Obama. I mean, I haven't seen that yet. So thank God for that. But, I mean...
There's been hateful things, you know, as Kathleen was talking about. I mean, absolutely. Shep Smith mentioned it on Fox News about the hateful comments about Robin Williams. As you get every time some quote unquote Hollywood celebrity dies, it's really just disgusting, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I've blocked more than a few people on Twitter over the last 24 hours. That's for sure. More broadly speaking, you know, I thought those remarks to, I think it was, you know, don't snicker, but Thomas Friedman at the New York Times, the president, you know, made this observation. I thought it was a good sort of launching pad to get into, you know, where we are with the political discourse. And I think, you know, what we've observed for many, many years now is that the Tea Party far right is taking over the asylum. The Republicans have enabled them to the point where the establishment Republican Party has been seized by its far right flank.
Yeah.
And I said, on the other hand, that hasn't happened on the left. But there's a potential for it to happen.
Yeah, and I think that's been very important. And, you know, because I wanted to talk to you, obviously, a lot about Robin. We got to talk more about this, though, because I thought, boy, you know this is going to keep happening. I've been called a Zionist puppet whose paycheck is signed by a Jew. I know Kathleen Madigan was a big Hillary girl. So, but if Hillary gets in, we're going to hear that, right? She's too corporatist. She's too this. She's too, you know, she's not a true liberal, right?
Oh, it's already started.
Yeah.
It's already begun. Yeah, and it's only going to get worse. I'm kind of bracing myself for, and of course I intend to support Hillary Clinton for president, but I'm fully prepared for just the onslaught of crapola that's going to descend around that candidacy, and it really like I said, it's already started.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will talk to a very drunken Kathleen Madigan about that next segment. Bob Seska, I want to talk. We'll talk more about your piece next week, okay? And
that's fine. Robin Williams is much more important than whatever the hell I wrote about.
I know. It's always great to talk to you, Bob. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thanks,
Say Bob. Hi to Mrs. Seska.
Whatever.
Okay. 48 minutes.
She always gets in the way.
I kid. 48 minutes after the hour. Right back with the remaining moments. Ooh, look at those cartoon Chardonnay canaries circling Kathleen Madigan's head. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
No need to thank us. It's what we do.
Who the hell are you guys?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
All right, we were just discussing relatively hilarious orgasm scenes in movies. Sharon Stone having an orgasm while she's driving off a bridge with some guy in Basic Instinct 2.
That sounds like that movie, Holly Hunter movie Crash.
Travis said Elizabeth Berkley was like, it was like she was getting waterboarded while she was having an orgasm in Showgirls.
Mm.
Didn't see that either.
Yeah,
I'm a terrible movie person.
Movie talk. Fran in Sacramento. Steph, not sure if Fisher King has been mentioned yet in regards to
Robin
Williams.
Nobody mentioned that.
That was a great movie.
And Jeff Bridges played a radio DJ. And also, Mercedes Rule. Need I say more? I don't think so. Love her. She's
and Amanda Plummer.
Yes.
Amanda Plummer was at her Amanda Plummeriest in that movie.
Indeed she was.
I forgot.
She's a little off.
Yeah. Oh, look, Kathleen's getting, I can tell it's almost nap time.
No, it's almost nap time, yeah.
3 hours.
Well, I've been up since 1, so it's 9. It's an 8-hour day.
Yeah.
That's when you get a nap.
Yeah.
Most people take a little nap after work, right?
Uh-huh.
I've been up since 1.
Why have you been up since 1?
Because I'm afraid I won't wake up.
Oh, I see.
So I just lay there and keep looking at the clock. Yeah.
Well, it was
unless I take Tylenol PM.
It was worth it. You were magnificent, despite all the bad advice you've given today, and you've given quite a bit.
Well, you know, don't be a hater until you try it. You want to judge? Go ahead, judge. Just say it. I think my way, my easy step down of addiction.
Well, a lot of stressful stuff in the news. You obviously did comedy with Robin Williams in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're back in Iraq, as we talked. Oh, not back in Iraq enough for Senator Butch Me Up, Lindsey Graham.
He's trying to avoid a bad news story on his watch. This is not a replacement for a strategy to deal with an existential threat to the homeland.
Oh, to the homeland. See, we got to fight him there so we don't fight him here. Remember that whole thing?
All coming
we're back
here.
To that, yeah. Yeah, we're back to the whole, fight him over there so they don't come here. Remember that?
That's
one of my favorites.
That.
Yeah, that was magic. Oh, and by the way, in other news, World War III is about to start on the... NATO has warned of Russian invasion of Ukraine. Have you heard about this? President Putin said Monday Russia is sending an aid convoy into eastern Ukraine despite urgent Western warnings against using humanitarian help as a pretext for an invasion. There's about 45,000 Russian troops massed on the border. NATO said there's a high probability that Moscow could intervene militarily in the country's east, where Kiev forces are closing in on pro-Russian separatists. So more good news.
Great.
Fun.
More good news.
Fun, yeah.
Good times, good times. And Ebola's back.
Yeah, that's fun. I can tell that our sanctions have really bothered Putin.
Yeah.
As he sits there and pets his little gold giraffe. Exactly. It's like, look at the dude. He doesn't care.
No.
I don't know. Even the European sanctions, which should mean a little bit more.
Right.
With the energy trades and all
that. Sure.
Yeah.
Has he done one thing differently? No.
Nope. Putin does what Putin wants to do.
Yeah. And I think the Russian people are kind of backing it because they feel like they've been kicked around a lot. And hey, here we go.
Well, also, I think the Russian people miss their superpower status.
That's what I mean.
And like it looks like Putin is trying to get
that
back.
He's doing a rebuild, and we're cool, and we don't need these people, and we'll be on our own. And meanwhile, you know, we just keep saying, that's it. We're not going to send you any more peanuts and jam.
I know what you're thinking. What does Pat Robertson think we should do about Iraq?
Yeah, good one.
Pat Robertson discusses plan to impeach Obama over Iraq. He said, intervene, Lawrence. Send the angels.
The angels are going to impeach him?
Apparently.
All right.
He asked his audience to pray because chaos and terror were coming to every person living in the United States of America. We see a feckless administration unwilling to act except in feckless terms. God, we need the angels. We need your help. We need the strength of God Almighty. We need your power, Lord. Intervene, Lord. Send the angels. Do miracles.
Okay. Well, define a miracle. I'm not against sending angels.
Oh, well, he had just had a general on that said the president and his entire security, national security teams needs to be impeached, which that's not actually in the Constitution, but that's not important now.
Mm. I understand what he wants. I don't agree, but okay, Pat. By the fact that he's even still on a channel talking blows my mind.
I think it's too late to hydrate with something else other than the
mimosas. I've been drinking water the whole time.
Okay, all right.
It's part of the Fitbit plan.
Oh, you have a Fitbit.
I love my... It's just an obsessive thing.
Is
I need to beat it every day.
Okay.
I have a friend that never used to exercise at all, and it's only now because he's so competitive that he has that thing.
Yeah, it gamifies fitness.
If you have any, like, obsessive compulsive traits in your home makeup, this will take over your life.
All right.
Literally to the point where... Because I said, oh, so it's by arm motion? Yeah. What's to stop me from sitting on the couch going like this?
Okay, you look like you're doing something dirty. Go ahead.
No, just hang out like this. What's that counts as a step.
Right.
And my brother goes, I don't think the idea is for you to figure out ways to trick it. And I said, well, I'm just saying I could if I'm at 9,998. I'm just like this on the couch. And they goes,
How can we follow you, Kathleen Madigan?
On Twitter. I play a lot on Twitter. I do block frequently. Don't be mean. Don't be mean.
We love you, Robin. Nanu, nanu. I had to do it.
You did it.
Yeah. I get it. We love you, Kathleen. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie
Miller Show.
Thanks, Kathleen.